Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike 2099, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slaggy McWaggy 2.
Yar!
Today is November 9th, 2025, and this is GameBuoy Podcast, episode 186. I want the one I can't have. Taking a look at some more recent instances of lost media and cut content in games that have captured our imaginations in another installment of the GameBuoy Remake Project, part 11 in the intermittently ongoing series, as we use retrospective perspectives to reflect on some notable video games that were canceled, stuck in development hell, saved from the brink of cancellation, or otherwise radically retooled from the last 12 or so years, as we revisit episode 52, originally published all the way back on May 4th, 2014. In GameBuoy Remake Project Episode 11. So that's what we have here on deck today, but before that, let's get started, relax, and talk about some games news. Slaggy, what is the way that we rhyme?
So, to start things off, there was a discussion about video game consumer protections and games preservation in an unlikely venue, the UK House of Commons. One of the things that they were citing as kind of a springboard for the discussion is the fact that, you know, Concord's shutdown was very sudden and kind of like almost deceitful, I guess. Like, oh,
well, we
gonna sell you a game. And even though they did refund it, like, you know, not very consumer friendly. They also cited the, oh, sorry, you were going to say?
Well, no, I was actually just agreeing with you. It does seem very consumer unfriendly and even like almost an exploitative cash grab to try and release some of these games and then immediately make them non-functional, which I think is what initiatives like Stop Killing Games really is ultimately about. And in fact, has kind of a through line through our discussion here to some degree. But by all means, I think you had a little more you wanted to say.
Right, right. They also specifically called out The Crew, which we have talked about here, and Anthem, which we also have talked about here. Obviously, Anthem is not shut down yet, but time is a ticking. So, you know, it was just interesting for me to see. This almost could have been a culture club discussion, but, you know, obviously these shutdowns are very hot topics, so to speak, in the gaming news world. So,
yeah. And, you know, to the degree that this show is us standing on soapboxes and ranting on the internet, one of our big passion points is, in fact, you know, that these types of game releases and sudden shutdowns are really exploitative. They are really consumer unfriendly. And frankly, it is literally the type of thing that regulation exists for.
Yeah. So it was just really interesting to see it take place in a venue such as the UK House of Commons. Eurogamer did mention that an overwhelming amount of pro-consumer and pro-preservation sentiment was heard from the ministers of parliament who were present for this discussion or debate. So hopefully, excellent, when we do GameBuoy Remake Project, Prime Delta Squared, in another 10 years or 12 or 13, we won't be
Lost
talking
chapter
about
epilogue.
Right. We won't be talking about games that aren't playable anymore. I'm just like, oh, this was something that was a dungeon that was announced for Final Fantasy XIV's 9.0 expansion and never actually got into the game. Oh, you can't play this game anymore. So,
yeah, it would really be my hope that, you know, this era of live service games as dead media that we'll get into a little bit. I would love it if that was something that we looked back on in the future as like, man, it sucked back when that used to happen. And I'm hoping that initiatives like Stop Killing Games is how we start getting to that future.
Stop Killing Games, Start Preserving Games.
Yes, big that. A little inversely, as that can be viewed as a little bit of a bummer news story, we have some somewhat exciting news for fans of Nintendo and fans of the Switch, which, per this news story, could well be practically everybody. Basically, Nintendo has already moved, they've announced as of their most recent earnings reports earlier this month, more than 10 million Switch 2 units. They've also moved 10 million copies of Mario Kart World and 3.5 million copies of Donkey Kong Bonanza. This is all to suggest the Nintendo Switch 2 is off to another kind of run, the likes of which we have just seen the Switch 1 starting to wrap. Switch 2 appears to be outpacing sales when aligned by release date with the PlayStation 5. The Switch 1, we just got word, is looking like it might be beginning to compete with the PlayStation 2 in terms of like all-time consoles sold, you know, having now surpassed some of the other Nintendo legacy consoles. It's all just like a really exciting time for Nintendo as far as the numbers go.
Bro, this is Nintendo in their flop era. They haven't flopped this hard since the Wii U.
Ah, right. We also got the somewhat surprise announcement. This was back just before Halloween, that Animal Crossing New Horizons will be getting a Switch 2 edition on January 15th, as well as a free version 3.0 update. This surprised many of us, since way back at the time of the 2.0 update for New Horizons, Nintendo had actually officially at that time called it the final major update. So the fact that we now have a new major free update, one which is even going to include like a new Cap'n Resort Hotel subgame mode, which, that to me is practically a new Happy Home Designer project, right? It just feels like a really large update for a game that we had been told wasn't getting any more content. And the fact that, you know, it does have a Switch 2 upgrade pack, but that it is going to be priced at a $5 price point rather than the $10 price point that many of the others have reached the market at, also has me fairly optimistic about this update. I'm not a huge Animal Crossing fan, but I do dabble. I will definitely be poking into this one, particularly since one of the features this update is bringing is the return of like the classic style, like game console decoration for the houses. Slaggy, do you have any excitement for this?
Oh, absolutely. I can't help but wonder if they were hoping to have the next Animal Crossing on their roadmap a little earlier in the Switch 2's lifetime, but after wanting to let it cook in the oven, we're like, maybe we do need to put out some more content for New Horizon to tide the fans over.
Yeah, I actually do agree that there's something like that in the mix. I think when they previously announced that this was the final update for New Horizons, they probably had the expectation that they would get a new project going. And I do think the fact that we're getting a Switch 2 edition and this final update really more suggests that the next Animal Crossing is at a minimum another year or two out.
Oh, absolutely. I'm very excited for the crossover content, specifically the Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom influenced items.
Oh, yeah. So the new shop is going to have crossover elements, including other Nintendo titles and even like with Legos, right?
Legos, yeah. And something that I also think is pretty cool that, I was going to say nobody's really talking about, but I've, you know, literally seen news stories talking about it, is the Dream Islands, or I think they call it something different. So the Dream Island is that, like, you could have people visit your island offline, but what they're doing now is you can have up to 3 islands. It's basically like a creative mode.
Yeah.
Like
you would see in
something like Minecraft. So like for me, that's super exciting because like I am not one of those people who is like, I'm just going to restart my game or completely demolish my island and start over. Like, so basically, you know, it just lets you kind of create a cute little world. So like I'm about to create a, you know, pirate themed island with you, TBH.
Yeah, I could think of a couple of fun projects that could be enabled with this functionality, especially like you say, asymmetric working on collaborative projects like that.
Yeah, so I am very excited about this. Excellent. I just hope this means another global pandemic isn't on the way.
Oh my God, right?
January 17th.
You've heard of recession indicators. This is a pandemic indicator.
Pandemic part 2. Pandemic boogaloo. Please not. On a completely different note, we have another interesting update in the Nintendo wants to patent monster catching RPG mechanics saga. Recently, Japan had rejected their efforts to patent some of these mechanics. And now we have word that the U.S. patent, the U.S. patent and trademark, I don't know why the word patent is so hard for me to say. The U.S. patent and trademark office is, quote, re-examining, end quote, the patent that they just granted to Nintendo in September. The office has determined that substantial new questions of patentability have arisen. You know, we had talked previously, the past couple months about, you know, some of the aspects of what they're trying to patent, like, random encounters. Is questionable that they have the right to
summoning monsters to appear next to you,
right? Hello, yeah, no, sorry.
You know, I have so this to say, is, there's yeah. there's almost a certain degree of this that reads to me like the office didn't understand what they were doing, and then as soon as the entire internet dunked on them, they were like, "Wait a minute, we need to look at that again."
Someone's like, "Yeah, my uncle works at the patent and trademark office, and I'm a gamer." So that's actually, that's the case, maybe. You know, so this just is an interesting wrinkle with the ongoing litigation with Palworld, like. You know, I do not have interest in Palworld, honestly, but, you know, this could be shifting the odds in their favor.
Yeah.
Not that I, like, want it to be in their favor, necessarily, but also Nintendo doesn't have the right to patent some of these things, honestly.
The part that does feel that some of the stuff Palworld has done is infringing, like, I would kind of like to see them get hit on those things, but I don't want Nintendo to be given a patent on something that they don't deserve to have a patent on in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously not a patent expert, so... I can't say for sure, but that's literally their job, so we will be seeing what comes from this.
Indeed. Let's see, we also have somewhat major news here. This is word of another live service game that is going to be put into maintenance mode. This is word that Halo Infinite's next update is intended to be the last major update. And unfortunately, I am not expecting this to be a Animal Crossing situation where we end up with more updates. This was announced on November 7th by Halo Studios. Halo Infinite, which came out in 2021, to mixed results, mixed impressions. Although broadly, I am a fan, though I don't play it a great deal. They basically announced that the next major update, Operation Infinite, will be the last major update for the game. They did note that they have multiple new Halo titles in development, and that this reason they're doing this is to pull staff toward those projects and away from this one. The game is not being shut down. It will be staying up, and Halo Studios is committing to offering new challenges and even new seasons. There's just not going to really be like new content in terms of guns, weapons, vehicles, what might have you. It's a little unfortunate, but this update will be coming out November 18th, and if you're a fan like I am, it might be a nice time to revisit it and check in, you know, for the last big burst of new content.
Yeah, I think this is a lot more palatable than, you know, shutting down servers and delisting games.
Yeah, I will say I am broadly a big fan of the maintenance mode approach. That is, you know, getting your servers overhead to as low of a number as possible and then running those servers effectively indefinitely for as long as you can. That does for me make it a far more palatable approach to even check out some of these games, you know, sort of post hoc after the fact. And in fact, funny enough, we have another maintenance mode story right here. This is word that the major MMO that had been published by Amazon Game Studios specifically, this is New World, is going to be entering into maintenance mode. They have stated that at least at this time, their intentions are to continue the servers operating in maintenance mode through 2026. You know, it seems like they had kind of looked for like maybe trying to see if they could get someone else to run the game or something, but it just doesn't look like that really happened. Likewise, also, this is all sort of related to the termination of 14,000 jobs at Amazon Game Studios. It looks like the previously upcoming Lord of the Rings MMO is going to remain unfinished and not release. I was not a big, I can't say fan of New World because I didn't play it. It didn't really capture my attention. The people I knew who were playing it mostly bounced relatively quickly. However, all the same, I just hate hearing about any of these games becoming effectively lost to their fan bases.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about her, but I wish her well.
Yeah. Well, you know, New World had been a major talking point when it first came out. And I'd even kind of looked at it in terms of just like, oh, is that anything for me? Ultimately, I didn't really feel like it was for me. But my understanding is that it did have a small but dedicated following.
Well, I hope those people enjoy it.
Yeah. I hope that they continue enjoying the game. And I hope that everyone who was laid off in those layoffs bounces back and finds gainful employment as quickly as they can.
Absolutely. And for those of you who have been really looking forward to finally enjoying Grand Theft Auto 6 in May, sorry, it's been delayed again. Rockstar just announced that the new release date will be November 19th, 2026, so like pretty much a year from now. They posted on social media that, quote, "These extra months will allow us to finish the game with the level of polish you've come to expect and deserve," end quote. So like, that doesn't sound too bad, right? However, what they didn't tell us is that, you know, this is just speculation, but I would think it's pretty likely that part of the delay is because there is a large number of employees, not in the 14,000 employees range, but
but more than 30, as I understand.
Yeah, a couple dozen employees have been fired from Rockstar, and Rockstar has claimed that these employees were fired because they were discussing and distributing confidential information in a public forum, and, you know, on the surface, hey, there were some leaks and stuff. That could be believable. However, we also have word that the employees had been talking to labor organizers. And on that note, the Independent Workers of Great Britain, the IWGB, has accused Rockstar of union busting because the employees, which were between 30 to 40 members from the Rockstar team, were discussing efforts to unionize on Discord, and they were fired.
Of the major allegations is that they were doing this in a public forum, but the public forum, it's definitely important to note, was a private Discord that they had set up specifically to discuss between the IWGB and these Rockstar employees. So like, they're representing it like, oh, this was a leaker Discord and not literally a Discord that was created to help them get their union set up. So it definitely looks pretty up. There appears to be a trail here that we can follow. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. Rockstar had initially said that the employees were guilty of gross misconduct, but like, honestly, sounds like they are guilty of gross misconduct. In fact, the IWGB is saying that this is one of the most blatant and ruthless acts of union busting in the history of the games industry.
Damn.
And to that I have to say, busting makes me feel bad. Union busters are bad.
Oh my god. That was so good. The thing is, Grand Theft Auto is one of those series where I always say, oh, I don't play those. And then inevitably I pick one up and I give it a try. It's going to be a real freaking long time before I do that with Grand Theft Auto 6 after this news. I've been very clear over the years that I'm very pro-union. I definitely think that literally a union of individuals, no matter how that could be like perverted, is pretty much always going to have your back better than a corporation that literally only exists to profit. And so, because, you know, the individuals are at least going to have some skin in the game, whereas the corporation, any way they can exploit you for profit, they will, I promise you. So hearing this, honestly, it just makes my blood boil. It really bums me out, and it definitely makes me feel very negative about Grand Theft Auto 6.
Why are you talking about perverted stuff on this show, you pervert?
I didn't mean pervert that way, but I hear you.
I know, but in all seriousness, like, I was actually kind of buying into the GTA 6 hype. Like, okay, like, they've got a hot himbo. It looks like it's going to be very ambitious. Maybe, even though these aren't usually my type of game, I might check it out. And now I'm like, nah, bro.
Well, there's that guy in the Brian's hat that looks like he's practically one of the lost Travis Kelce brothers or something. I had that image on my upper monitor while I was working on show notes earlier this week. My husband came in the room and literally was like, oh, who's sending you pictures like that? So it's not just you who's like, damn, this guy's okay looking.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of the actually multiple of the PC Gamer articles were linking to use that image as the key image for their article.
Yeah,
that's
exactly why it was one of the articles was open on my top monitor, and so he saw it
when
he came in the room.
So funny. But you know what's not funny is the next thing you're going to talk about.
Indeed. Unfortunately, nearly all areas of Square Enix's Western business are going to be impacted by an incoming wave of layoffs as part of a stated U.S. and European restructuring. This is a pretty major deal. We have not yet even heard, like, exactly how many people are being impacted. I've heard some estimates of like as high as like 70% of their staff in these territories, though I want to be clear, that's something I read on social media and not something I read in the article we are going to link you over on GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
But the thing is, there was a companion statement by Square Enix made the same day that has a lot of people presuming these are two related news stories in a way that most of us do not want to support. This is that Square Enix has said that they want generative AI to be doing as much as 70% of its quality assurance / debugging work by the end of next year.
Oh, sorry. I'm just gagging over here. And I'm like, yes. I'm not like, yes, hunty, gagging at your eleganza. Like, literally about to vomit, but not literally.
Yeah. I know multiple people who work in that space, people who are having AI, gen AI tools foisted upon them, who are repeatedly at least telling me that they don't think these tools even work that good. So I do have to say I am very pessimistic, or actually I guess I'm optimistic. I don't think this is actually going to work the way Square Enix says it's going to. I think they're about to make an unforced error and probably end up having to chase back and rehire some of the talent that they end up cutting. I do think we're going to see a year or so here where a lot of Square Enix games are going to end up having obvious like machine translated text and just not really release at the high level of like prestige content that we've become used to. You know, sort of Square Enix is practically, as a joke, has been a premium product since the days of charging more for Square Enix 3DS games, right? So I don't think this is going to work out the way they think it is. I think you can only charge a premium expense for your games if you're giving a premium experience. And I don't believe generative AI is going to be a part of a premium experience. So Square Enix is just going to have to make the mistakes that they are obviously intent on making. And I am going to stop touching their games that are produced through this pipeline, or get them when they're 70% off their retail price, and we'll just have to play it by ear from there.
Yeah, as someone who is a huge Square Enix fan, yeah,
I was just gonna ask.
Not good. And you were talking about premium gaming a lot. Are you sure that you're not actually Randy Pitchford over there?
We don't even have. I thought you were setting me up for another story. We don't even have a Borderlands 4 story here.
That's a shocker,
right? No, and just to sort of put the bow on this Square Enix thing, obviously everyone whose job is impacted by this, our thoughts and hearts go out to you. I hope that you get gainful employment again as soon as possible. Full tilt. I think Square Enix is making a mistake terminating, and I don't think I could say that in more clear terms. But if they're intent on cutting off their nose to try and make a buck, then they're just going to have to see how that works for them. Sort of the FAFO of it all, right?
Yep. Shame on you, Square Enix. But then, you know, they also were all talking about the blockchain and look where that went. So,
well, and that's what I mean, right? They did do one NFT game, Symbio Genesis or something it's called. But I also just saw on Silicon Era, I think it was a month or two ago, that was ending. So yeah, it for like a year, they pursued this stupid thing and it obviously didn't make them any money. That's how I expect this initiative to go to.
If they keep, as long as they keep their hands off Final Fantasy and by extension, Kingdom Hearts, like, do it on Foam Stars 2 or whatever. I don't care. I do care, but, like, you better not touch my Final Fantasies.
Yeah, I am really worried for 7 Remake Part 3 right now and for Kingdom Hearts 4, but I'm just trying to keep my head down and really hope that these things, that these initiatives have passed by the time those games come out, right? Something that I've heard a lot about AI workflows is that, and I'm very fortunate that I haven't been impacted by this in my life, but from folks in creative industries, I've heard a lot of like, oh yeah, they have us run a draft in AI and then we end up having to make the whole thing by hand anyway. So it just ends up making things take more time. And like, as a result, a lot of my friends in creative industries now have like worked out with their bosses to not use AI after their bosses made them. And I just almost wonder if in the longer term, we won't see that here. I say wonder, but I guess I mean hope that, you know, the people actually working on these games are going to be like, yeah, that's going to be a pass, dog. Yeah. All right. Let's see. We also have some bummer news here, but it's because we're sort of establishing a little bit of a theme. This is the major word that Marvel 1943, The Rise of Hydra, has been delayed indefinitely. That is to say, this is the second major delay this game has seen, and as of now, it straight up no longer has a release date. I think this is a bummer. In the sense that, you know, we've talked a lot about Amy Hennig over the years. This is a game that she is associated with. I'm just kind of worried about the fact that this game is seemingly continuing to fail to sort of come together. I'm trying to stay hopeful, particularly since I am a fan of Amy Hennig's, but definitely not a good look when you see a game continue to get pushed back like this with basically no footage having been shown to the public. Everything I think we have seen of the game has been leaks and stuff for the most part. We've gotten very little official footage of this game, I think.
This wasn't even the first time this has happened to Amy Hennig, right? Because she was involved in Project Ragtag, that Star Wars game with EA.
You're absolutely right, yeah.
Yeah, damn, let Amy get her games out, please.
Right? I'll also note, I guess in the modern day, she's more known for her work in the Uncharted series. But for me, it's all about her time in the Legacy of Kain series. Obviously, you know, she was a part of Crystal Dynamics during the development of Blood Omen, but she is largely within the Soul Reaver sub fandom, like really held up as like our Joss Whedon, basically.
Oh, don't taint Amy with association with him.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mean it with regard to any of the problematic concerns, and rather the writing and directing, you know, creative force perspective.
Right. She was involved in Forspoken, too. But yeah, anyways, yeah. I guess this is turning into Amy Hennig cast, so we should probably keep it moving.
Yeah. Well, let's start transitioning into our release updates. I want to talk about an announcement that Nintendo made this past week. I almost said an announcement Pokemon made.
Same thing.
Right? This was the announcement this week of Pokemon Legends Zeta A's Mega Dimension DLC release date and price tag. We did already know that this was going to be an extra $30, I suppose. What we didn't know was that it was going to be releasing on Switch and Switch 2 on December 10th.
That's very soon.
Right? Via the new trailer, we got looks at several new Mega Evolutions. We got a look at a different version of Lumiose City that will be having like different wild areas. I guess there's going to be like a whole over level 100 mechanic introduced for the first time. We're also going to have more new returning characters from the original Pokemon X and Y. So just a lot of stuff to really look forward to if you, like me, enjoyed Pokemon Legends Zeta A. I will note that most of my primary concerns about Zeta A do not appear to be addressed here. As I had noted last week, though, while I don't think Zeta A is a perfect game, it is a game I'm enjoying enough that I will be playing, particularly since, as I will discuss later this episode, I've actually more or less come pretty close to 100%ing the game now. Slaggy, what are your thoughts on the Mega Dimension DLC?
I'm surprised it's coming so soon. I was not expecting it until at least January, but
Word on the streets is that they're getting it out fast to clear the decks for the announcement of the new generation early next year.
Oh, true, because that usually kind of comes around in like February-ish, huh?
Yeah, when they do the Pokemon Day in February.
Yeah, so that makes sense. And I guess they kind of did that with Bonanza, too. They kind of rushed that out, so I mean, I'm not thrilled with the fact that this could have just been a free update, but I still pre-ordered it, so guilty.
Ah, now see, I haven't pre-ordered yet, but I think I am going to. Because as I've noted, I actually do have really enjoyed the game, and I have nearly 100%ed it. So for me, that's like, okay, yeah, I guess I do want more.
Yeah.
It's actually funny because I feel like my answer of if I wanted more or not was different up until I finished sort of the epilogue quest. And then I ended like, okay, no, actually, I guess I am ready for more.
Excellent. And I'm ready for some more release updates. What you got for us?
Damn, girl. All right. First word up is that One Piece Pirate Warriors 4 is finally getting the long-awaited next-gen console update. That is the update that will allow the game to take advantage of specific functions for the PlayStation 5, Xbox Series, and Switch 2 is finally going to be releasing on November 21st. But that's not all. That same day, they're going to be releasing the Egghead Island Pack DLC. I'm really excited about this. I literally am watching through the Egghead Island Pack or Egghead Island arc of the animation right now. We're nearing the end as we're just to the second half of those episodes now. It's all very exciting stuff. I watched the trailer for these new characters that are coming in this pack. I got so excited because I just watched them in action in the animation, you know? Very, very exciting stuff. We also got word that Sonic Racing Crossworlds Switch 2 edition will finally be releasing on December 4th. We got word that the port of Hitman Absolution will be releasing for Switch on November 13th. The game Unbeatable, the rhythm beat-em-up that we have been looking forward to since its demo released a few months back for PlayStation 5 and, I believe, PC platforms, has been delayed to December 9th.
Beatable? It's delayed, damn it!
We got word of another DLC update that is coming to the Atari, the 50th anniversary celebration game. This is the Namco Legendary Pack. This will be launching on November 13th, and it is of special note that it actually contains the Atari port of Pac-Man that we had talked about here on the show in recent history. At the time, I suggested it would probably never get another release, so that's egg on my face.
That's so funny.
Let's see, this past week's Arcade Archives release was a really exciting one for 90s arcade enthusiasts. This was the release of Tokyo Wars. This is a first-person-ish, like, tank shooter game that was in the arcade. This was one of those big deluxe cabinets that Nintendo did. Namco did. It was followed up by a game called Tank Tank Tank, but that one had sort of like a unique monitor, so I don't foresee that getting ported as a part of this series. I'm just really excited. I've said this previously. Anytime we get these deluxe cabinet releases on Arcade Archives, games that have never gotten ported to home before, I think that's really exciting. And that's my favorite place to see the publisher hamster working in, you know? And then we also got word of Dokapon 321 Super Collection. This is releasing physically and digitally at the end of January in Japan, specifically on the 29th. This is a collection that features three games in the popular Dokapon series. Dokapon 321 for the Super Famicom, Dokapon 4 for the Super Famicom, and Dokapon Gaiden, also for the Super Famicom. If you're a fan of this series, I know that I have enjoyed several of them. I think this is probably something that you should look into. And last, but certainly not least, is word that Raiden Fighters Remix Collection will finally be releasing westward on February 26th, 2026. This is all really exciting stuff. Several of these are titles I will be looking into. Saigi, did anything there catch your eyes?
I mean, I'm just like, damn, I better catch up on One Piece. I'm still back in Dressrosa, so I got to get to the Egghead Island arc so I can play the Egghead Island pack.
Yes, go for it.
Only 600 or so episodes to go. I can do it.
Well, you know, if you didn't spend so much time at the club, you could watch more One Piece.
All right, well, unfortunately, our first item as we step into the club is not a super fun one. It's not a bop. So let's just say that a Department of the Government of the country in which Captain Spike and I live used imagery from the Halo franchise in a social media post that was aiming to recruit for its federal law enforcement agency that purports to be about immigration control, but, you know, is more of a state police force that's aiming to disappear certain ethnic groups. This is the same government agency that used the theme music from the American dub of the anime based on a popular Nintendo franchise about, you know, the one where you must obtain all of them. This also follows our government posting an AI-generated image of our chief elected official of the country in which we live wearing Master Chief's armor. So, PC Gamer...
That was the one that was just on that silly little Console Wars Are Over Dead post, right?
Yeah. Like taking credit for it because, I guess, you know, stopping wars.
Yeah, so, oh my stuff. God, I didn't even realize until right now, you know, he always is parroting how he's stopped so many wars, and he recently started, like, saying, because it started, he was saying, I stopped 6 wars, and now he's saying, I stopped 8 wars. Is he counting the console war as one of them?
He might be. PC Gamer ran this article, which we can link over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
They reached out to Microsoft, and Microsoft said they do not have anything to share on the matter. But you know who does? 2 former Bungie employees who had worked on the franchise. They spoke to our buddy, Steven Totillo, over at GameFile. He's not actually our buddy, but, you know, I feel like we owe him for the times where we kind of shit-talked Kotaku back in the day.
Of these sites that we frequently link, man, they may not know us, but we love them. We could not do what we do if not for the hard work of all of these individuals.
Yeah. I mean, Totillo's doing great work over at GameFile. One of these former Bungie employees described this use of the, it's the use of the flood to equate that to an ethnic group. Described this as absolutely abhorrent. The other said it was despicable and also noted that the Flood are evil space zombie parasites and are not allegory to any group of people. So, you know, as we talk about some of these things, and we have to be cautious with our language, I feel like if you've tuned into recent episodes, you kind of understand why we are doing that. I just want to be very clear, and I don't think it's too presumptuous to speak for both of us, Captain Spike. We here at GameBuoy do not support anything that dehumanizes any group of people, whether that is based on their gender or their ethnic background or whatsoever, their socioeconomic status.
In fact, I want to say even explicitly, we do not support the dehumanization even of people whom broadly define themselves as being oppositional to the existence of people like us. Like, even, and I'm just, for the sake of making it easy, I'm just going to call them hater bitches. Even the hater bitches, I do not support your dehumanization. Like, I do not support belittling them and describing them as bugs or roaches or parasitic aliens. It's just truly a disgusting way to frame viewing other living human beings. And I have to tell you, I keep seeing Elon Musk and company talking about empathy is, you know, the modern sin or whatever. And it's like, no, that's antithetical to everything I've ever read in any theological text. And I'm reasonably certain that hundreds of years of morals and values passed down is correct over you, owner of Twitter, who is clearly not a happy individual.
World's first trillionaire. Woo!
I guess money really can't buy happiness.
There's also a little follow-up on PC Gamer as well, and I have to give major props to PC Gamer, who was very clear about their stance of not supporting this as well. The government agency in question who has been making these posts, like the Pokemon one and now the Halo ones, they've gone on record stating that they will not stop using memes based on these franchises or other ones, that they will do whatever they need to reach those who, you know, might want to join their cause, which is just predatory and disgusting. and shame on them.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's obviously worked really well for them through, you know, the Globber Gloop whole movement. So, you know, I'm not surprised that they intend to continue striking in that way. But man, it has never been more important to have conversations with your friends about your basic values. I swear to goodness.
Yeah, I mean, I think 4chan 4chan trolls are a great choice for recruiting for your law enforcement. Sure. I am looking forward to the day where we can speak more openly. But for Indeed. Now, I would love to hear you speak openly about Kojima and the Wachowskis.
Yeah, right?
Two auteurs that we love. Well, three, I suppose, right?
Right. So this is, and we're just going to kind of talk about the whole thing in one story, but it's sort of a two-pronged conversation in the sense. Basically, we got word early last that basically, per a report, the Wachowskis had actually been offering to Konami that they specifically wanted Kojima to make a Matrix video game project back in 1999. So first off, right off the bat, 26 years ago, we could have had Kojima make a Matrix game, and the Wachowskis were like actively passionate about wanting him to be the one to make it. Are you kidding me? And then the other piece here, you know, we know that Konami did not treat Kojima-san super well, particularly often. Kojima took to social media, and I saw this on Blue Sky, but my understanding is he also mirrors his posts on X. He had basically been posting that he was surprised to learn of this, that across the last 26 years, no one had ever told him that this conversation had happened, that from his perspective, they were mutual fans and had even been sending each other emails and stuff. At the time that this had happened, he had personally seen the Matrix in the US while he was here at a preview screening, but that like the movie, it wasn't even open in Japan when these conversations were happening, and he was such a mega fan that he had correspondences with them, and he didn't even hear that they had made this offer to Konami. That's wild to me. It just seems like a lose-lose, right? Because it's not just the Wachowskis losing and Konami losing. We, the fans who would have liked this, are also losing. Just incredible culture piece. I really felt we had to talk about it. Sagi, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I think that there's two things here. The first thing is that he mentioned that this is when he was really busy in the pipeline for Metal Gear Solid 2, which, you know, I've talked about that I have not gotten around to the Metal Gear franchise. It's long overdue for me. But my understanding is it's very well loved. And so, you know, if he'd worked on a Matrix game, he might not have been able to do Metal Gear Solid 2. The other thing is, why not now? Let's do it now.
I will say,
imagine with today's technology.
Yeah, I don't hate the idea.
Do it. No, I mean, we don't want to pressure Kojima, but we would be fans. And then they could also, the Wachowskis could also make a Speed Racer game. I'm sure there was probably one back then, but they should make another one in another movie. And speaking of making content for screens based on video game franchises, rumor has it, but this is specifically not about a game, so fuck you, this is culture. Rumor has it that Wildbrain, which is the studio behind the Sonic Prime series that had ran on Netflix for, I believe, 3 seasons, it is rumored that they are working on a Crash Bandicoot animated series. So no further details at this point, but you know, I feel like Crash Bandicoot seems like a perfect candidate for sort of series in the same vein as the Sonic animated series. So I'll let you know if we hear more about that.
Indeed. Let's see. We also got word here, and this is very exciting for those of us who remember the early PlayStation 1 era. This is word that company Edia is going to be working to port Battle Arena Toshinden's 1, 2, and 3 to modern platforms.
Oh, wow. That's very buoy.
Yeah. Battle Arena Toshinden 1, 2, and 3. These were like sort of like progenitor 3D fighting games, right? The first one was like a launch era PS1 title. And it really, in a lot of ways, I think, sort of set the expectations for how 3D fighters work. I dare say in the modern era, these games may not be the most mechanically deep, but I expect, based on my recollection of them as pretty tight fighters, they're probably still a great deal of fun. I'm really looking forward to this. I believe we are expecting these titles to release between 2026 and 2027. Edea typically is a retro a company that specializes in porting this type of content. So I think the games are going to be treated well enough. I'm really excited for this. Slaggy, did you have any thoughts about this one?
I think it's really cool when we see Left of Center Gaming kind of have its time in the spotlight.
Indeed. Let's see. We also had word here that Nintendo has not exactly committed, but has indicated that they intend on keeping the Nintendo Switch 2 at its current $250 price point for as long as they can. I think the specific poll quote here, this is coming from Nintendo President Shintaro Furukawa, from the recent investor Q&A that happened just about a week ago. He said, "We believe that we'll be able to maintain the current level of profitability for hardware for the time being unless there are significant changes in external factors, such as a shift in tariff assumptions or other unexpected events." Broadly, I think that this is a good situation that Nintendo is in. They have the hardware seemingly priced at a price where, you know, many of us feel it is a little high, but ultimately worth it. They appear to be making a profit that they find agreeable. I'm happy for this, but frankly, hearing this word almost made me worried that exploitative opportunists aren't going to start putting them in their sights, so to speak. Slaggy, what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, I hope that, I mean, you know, obviously I have mine for now, so it doesn't impact me, but I hope that people are able to continue getting it at this price point.
Indeed. Fingers crossed. What else do you got?
Well, have you ever wondered the real story about why the mainline Pokemon games have two versions?
I sure have.
I'm sure that you may say, oh, it's just a ploy to sell more games, you know, especially to people like me who don't really have friends and have to trade with themselves. I mean, now I have you as a friend, and I just have to say Pokemon Bank would have made things a lot easier back in the day instead of having to get two link cables, you know, or, oh, you know, two Game Boys and use a link cable. Anyway, we got a little fun story from a recent shareholders meeting, and the legendary Miyamoto-san said that a long time ago, Tajiri-san, the director of Pokemon, joked with me that if you want to surpass Nintendo's Mario, you have to sell two copies of the game to each customer. And that's apparently why they did it. So, I mean,
that's crazy.
If you were like, oh, it's just a ploy to sell more games, then I guess you weren't really wrong. But it was more about the spirit of friendly competition. You know, just a reminder that Gary Oak is named Shigeru in Japan. So very intentionally named after Miyamoto-san. So I just think that's neat.
Let's see. We have a word here. This is coming out of Marvel Game General Manager Haluk Mentes. This was in an interview with a Game Informer talking about Marvel's Spider-Man as well as Marvel's Wolverine. And they basically had indicated that Insomniac is going to be working with Marvel for years to come. A lot of us had been a little bit concerned about the malicious Insomniac hack that had occurred a few years ago. It had sort of outlined plans for the various Marvel games in ways that appear to still be having some negative impacts on Insomniac to date. But given that Marvel and representatives from Marvel are still talking about Insomniac as a going concern for now and the future to come, I think this is something to be really excited about.
Yeah, I have kind of seen, you know, sometimes these studios get made into the blank studio, like, you know, Crystal Dynamics, it's the Tomb Raider studio. So, you know.
Well, so I agree with you with the caveat that, first off, Insomniac had already been making some superhero adjacent games. My thing is, when you're thinking about in terms of becoming the IP studio, Marvel is a much more broad IP than Tomb Raider, for example. The fact that Insomniac could be pigeonholed as the Marvel studio is, for me, a lot less concerning than being pigeonholed as the Spider-Man studio, for example.
True.
Because you see them working on Spider-Man, you see them working on Wolverine. In the big leak, there had been an indication that there could be a broader set of plans for multiple X-Men games. We obviously don't know if that will ever come to pass. We don't know if the hack/leak could have negatively impacted those projects. But it definitely seems to me like having a broad IP like Marvel would be a lot less restrictive if you had to be restricted to one IP, right?
Right. And I mean, they do a great job with those Spider-Man games. So
yeah.
I think that's a good thing for gamers. But on the accidental note of mentioning Infamous, where's Infamous 3?
I
guess they're busy doing their Ghost of series now. But and meanwhile, the Sly Cooper fandom's like, hello.
Let's see. We also have word here that the Nintendo Store app, this was previously been available in Japan since April of 2020, has been made available in North America. This is a English language version of the app originally released as My Nintendo in Japan. This allows you to shop the Nintendo Store via the app, get information on specific games, review your own individual play activity, check in at official Nintendo events, and receive notifications about sales. It's all pretty basic stuff. This is the third Nintendo app that, they've published, and I've heard people indicate that they wish Nintendo would consolidate and put all of their stuff in one app. I'm not one of those people personally. I like specific apps for specific things. I think that making everything be an all functions in one app is part of why so many apps have become enshittified, rather than just having one dedicated thing that does the job correctly. That having been said, I did download this app. I do think it's cute and nice to have, especially to have more direct access to your play activity information. Just kind of a neat side thing. Slaggy, have you checked out the Nintendo Store app?
I have not, but I think that, we've seen this, like the PlayStation app does the same thing, kind of. So it's probably a long time coming, but I do feel like, I've definitely been like, oh, I haven't purchased that game yet, and I want to make sure that I can buy it because it is out soon, and I want to make sure it pre-downloads or whatever. So I have used these apps to buy games before, so I will probably do so with Nintendo.
Excellent. Let's see, we also got word of a big update that the PlayStation Portal got last week. This is word that if you're subscribed to PlayStation Plus Premium as of November 5th at 6 p.m. Pacific, you now have access to cloud streaming directly to your Portal instead of having to stream from your PS5 locally. This is, for me, I'm not a huge cloud streaming person because a lot of the micro stutter gets really in the way of me enjoying the game experience. But I know there are a lot of people who are really into cloud streaming games. I think this is really wonderful for those people. Psyche, I believe you have a Portal. Is this something you're going to check out?
I was literally going to say, I actually have a reason to dig out my Portal. Even though, literally, I mean, what this opens up is that, I could bring it on vacation or something. And, obviously I'm not going to be playing, an action game, but if it's something that, has cloud streaming just for a little funsies, I think it's definitely a, much needed update.
Yeah, excellent. Well, hopefully it works out and brings you more satisfaction with your device.
Yeah, I had purchased it with a gift card I had had from GameStop, I believe, from trade-ins or something. So I didn't really feel I wasted money on it, but now I feel like I'll actually get some use out of it. Yay! Ooh, so this is a great one to wrap up our culture club on. So if you have been dancing through life unaware of who Jonathan Bailey is, well, I have to say, I am surprised because, he is the star of Bridgerton. He recently was featured in Jurassic World Rebirth with those slutty little glasses, right? And of course, Wicked and Wicked for Good, which I can't wait to see. So we, who are Jonathan Bailey fans, are thrilled that he is this year's sexiest man alive, according to People magazine. So you might be wondering why we're talking about Jonathan Bailey on a video game podcast, besides the fact that we're super gay. He is the first sexiest man alive from People Magazine to have starred in a video game, because he is, of course, the voice of our beloved Final Fantasy XIV Catboy, Grahatia, who, you know, is in fact my Warrior of Light's boyfriend. Just a note, that is not canon. So I think this is great news. I am a huge Jonathan Bailey fan. I hope this opens up the field for Ben Starr to be next year's sexiest man alive, please.
I mean, he's going to need to be in some non-game things first so that the general audience can get into it. But also, yes, I agree.
I think he's been in a couple of non-game things, right?
Yeah, he was in that short film where he showed his bare ass recently, and you can kind of see his balls.
Oh my, I'm going to load that up.
Yeah, I recommend it.
He's done some like British television and stuff, so. Yeah, but he needs a big role to thrust himself into the limelight.
I would like to see Ben Starr's big role, yes.
You'd like to see Ben Starr thrust, yes. Shall we thrust ourselves into Idaho?
I was going to say, we're getting so gay culture here. Let's keep it going.
You're living in your own private Idaho. Living in your own private Idaho.
Wait, there's gay culture in Idaho? I thought they only had hetero awesome fez.
I'm talking about the movie My Own Private Idaho, silly.
Oh, I thought we were talking about the B-52 song My Own Private Idaho. Also gay, right? So, speaking of Final Fantasy XIV, once again, if you're not in the game flirting with Grahatia like I am, you might want to go check out the Fall Guys collaboration, because it is now back. It went back up a few days ago and will be running until November 27th. If you play Final Fantasy XIV and you've yet to check out Blunderville, it's a good time to do so. There are some cute rewards available. Maybe I can finally get first place for once, but probably not, lol.
I have to tell you, I know that, you know, with the way that snapshotting positioning works and the way that effects in the game work, a lot of people find the Blunderville very frustrating. I personally love it. I think it's delightful, and I have a total blast. I even kind of like it more than I like the actual game Fall Guys.
Right? Yeah. I mean, the whole point is just it's silly, it's fun, and it's cute, and I can't wait for it.
Yeah, and I will say with regard to the snapshotting issue, I think once you get used to how the snapshotting system works, it's not so bad. And in fact, to that degree, I actually think that Blunderville can be very useful in teaching you how to handle some of the raid mechanic AoEs and stuff.
Oh my god, right? Like the dizzy one? Like that's the way I figured out the spinning finger that makes you dizzy?
Ah, yeah, like the confused effect?
Yes.
Perfect. We could talk about Final Fantasy XIV all episode. We, in fact, will be talking about it more this episode. So let's talk about something else. I was very excited last week, again, just before Halloween, when it was announced via WayForward that a new seventh Shantae game is in development. This is very exciting for me. I know there are a lot of people who are presently frustrated with WayForward due to that mod retro Sabrina game release that had happened, where I guess they were accused of using like recycled chips and non-ideal materials and stuff. But for me, first off, my understanding is that recycled materials and chips are just kind of the reality of the reproduction game market in the modern day. But also, I can hold two thoughts in my head and I can have my concerns about that and also be excited about a new Shantae iteration. So I am. Psyche, did you hear about this? What were your thoughts?
Shantae, you slay.
Ah!
Shantae just always makes me think of Bowie, because we talked about her like very often in the early days.
Yeah,
Half Genie Hero.
Absolutely. We had another announcement here. This was a fairly small announcement, but kind of a notable one. This is word of the Resident Evil Generation Pack. Wario 64 linked for the digital pre-order. This is an $89.99, so $90 on the US eShop purchase, but it is a triple game bundle. It features Resident Evil 9 Requiem, so the new one coming out, but also the new gold releases for Switch of Resident Evil 7, Biohazard, and Resident Evil 8 Village. This is all three games for $90, which it's basically like you're getting Requiem at its full price and then the other two games for $10 each. As noted, these are the new native ports of the Resident Evil 7 and 8 games rather than the previous cloud versions. I think this is just an incredible deal. I think if you're interested in this era of Resident Evil, this is a really cost-effective way to get into that. I think these are great games, though I wouldn't recommend them to everyone. I know, Slaggy, in particular, you can be adverse to scarier experiences. Resident Evil 7 was practically making me shit myself. So,
ooh, girl.
Like, there's one segment where one of the family members can appear behind you, and she doesn't hurt you. She just appears there and watches you. And every time it happened, I had to catch my breath. Like, I was, like, getting freaked out by it. So I strongly recommend these games if you are looking for that kind of experience.
Not for me, but way to go, Capcom, for a consumer-friendly price point.
Yeah.
Because you could also think about it as paying $30 for each game, which is still a pretty good price.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. We have word here of another demo coming. This is noteworthy just because I have noted as the economy gets thornier and thornier, I have found a lot of value in playing demos of games and making fewer blind purchases as I need to make my dollars, you know, go a little further. So this is a demo of Rido Remastered, The Mystery of the Soulless Army. This is, of course, the remaster of the PS2 game Devil Summoner, Rido Kuzunoha versus the Soulless Army. I'm excited for this because I haven't actually played Rido Remastered. I would like to. So getting this demo and getting to see what the performance profile looks like on Switch 2 in particular, for me, is actually going to have a lot of value. The fact that this is going to be one of those demos that also allows us to continue our progress in the full game from where we left off in the demo, which for me is also always a major hook, means that I am more likely, if I have a good experience with the demo, to just pick up the full version there. Psyche, do you think you'll check this one out?
Possible, ho. I was talking like I'm Jack Frost.
Screaming. All right, let's see. We also got the kind of cool announcement that Fighting EX Lair, this is, of course, the game made by Arika. It's sort of a spiritual successor to Street Fighter EX, you know.
Yeah.
This has actually price dropped on the Steam platform to a 99-cent purchase, as well as on the PlayStation Store. This means if you're interested in checking this game out, now about 7 years after its original release, you can do so at a very cost-effective price. I will note, I did not have Fighting EX Lair on Steam previously. I'd had it on PS4, so I sure did dip on a 99-cent copy. I think this is really cool. I'm really excited for seeing more publishers trying to position games at risk-free prices, basically, right? Like, we're in a economic downturn. It is useful that people can check out older games for very cheap right now.
Yeah, I probably will open up my PlayStation app and buy this. It's awesome. Funny that the DLC costs more than the actual game. And if that wasn't exciting news, you're going to be really stoked for this one. Are you hungry for some protein? Well, if you are, then I've got great news for you, because the Chouinki Collection is coming to PC via Steam. It is currently available on Switch, but if you've been hungry to gobble up some protein, or shoot some protein, rather, with your muscle-bound brothers, then you can do so soon with the Chouinki Collection on Steam. This will collect the 1992 release Chouinki and 1995 release Ai Chouinki into one muscular package. Oh my god, doesn't it just make you want to shoot?
Ah, it's worth noting these are the PC Engine iterations of the series. And they are classics, I mean, of a sort. Classic Kusoge.
So gay.
Ah! And then our last story here for Idaho is word, as I've made it very known recently that I am a major fan of the game Vampire Survivors, Auroch Digital has announced Warhammer Survivors. This is a mashup game of Vampire Survivors and Warhammer 40K. It is made with the blessing and support of the creators of both Warhammer and Ponkle, so Vampire Survivors. It is set to release in 2026. Frankly, it looks pretty good to me. I'm looking forward to it, and if you have any interest in these properties and games, I think you may want to check it out as well. All right. All of that having been done, all of that having been said. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were setting it up for me to say it. Oh.
Well, why don't you take it over then?
Controversial.
Controversial.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
So, World of Warcraft's player housing is less than a month away. You know, the World of Warcraft Midnight expansion is coming, apparently. however, the rumors that many had seemed to have forgotten or just ignored that there would be a premium currency for housing items has indeed ended up coming to pass. In a blog post on their website, the World of Warcraft team announced that Hearthsteel will be a digital currency used for a handful of furniture items only and can be bought with WoW tokens. Their rationale for this is that, like, oh, if you want to buy multiples of the same item, rather than having to do multiple transactions of that single item, it's easier to use Hearthsteel. Like, I don't know.
Sure,
you know, obviously, as a microtransaction, this can seem very predatory. To play devil's advocate, you can also buy some housing items on the Final Fantasy XIV cash shop too, and, you know, it just opens up a whole can of worms about microtransactions, period. But the thing here is that having a whole separate currency is really convoluted. Like, that's honestly one of the things that my initial impressions of Blue Protocol Star Resonance was, like, there's three or four different currencies, and some are premium and some aren't, and there's a premium and non-premium version. Like, that just starts to get, like, even though this one's apparently only for the furniture items, like, I don't know.
Well, and it definitely gets under my skin, because if you do much reading on the mechanics that publishers use to exploit whales, separate currency is actually a really common tactic, because you're trying to get your whales to, like, disassociate from the feeling of actually spending their money, right? And you're also trying to, like, break them from realizing how much money they are spending. So the actual reasons for doing a separate pricing item, like a separate currency, are typically very exploitative. I don't see any reason why Hearthsteel couldn't just be in-game gold currency. Nothing of what I read really makes sense other than, oh, this is going to be useful for you to be exploitative to whales. And it just really underlines why I prefer to stay away from games that are published by those folks anymore.
Yeah, the whole WoW token thing kind of opened up a slippery slope, I think. And, like, that's a good point. Like, if you can buy them with WoW tokens anyways, why not just make them an in-game currency? And then you could either save up your gold in-game, or, you know, then it's a gold sink. Or if you want to buy the gold legally, then, you know, you can do it that way.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
No, you can just buy it with, I don't know.
Yeah, it feels exploitative. So anyway, this was a major kerfuffle among certain segments online this past week. Jeff Keighley's The Game Awards has announced that they will no longer be, and I mean, they actually didn't announce, they quietly didn't mention their future class initiative on their website anymore, and had seemingly removed all mentions of the initiative from their website. One of the previous year future class members, though, that had been noted at the 2023 event, this was Emma Kidwell, had noted that basically the program does appear to be dead, and the only archive that even proves it ever existed now is through the Wayback Machine. So it looks like game developer did a little more digging and basically only got any confirmation after they started asking around, and they found that after the last future class group got their programming finished, basically another class for future class was not inducted. The organizer, Emily Weir, reportedly said, "At this time, we are not planning a new future class for this year and do not have any active programming plans for future class." So this is an initiative that they started back in 2020. They were kind of trying to get their cookies for basically doing diversity and inclusion. And certainly the way it seems from now is that, you know, they got their profit and their advantage off of the backs of marginalized folks and are now discarding them. That is the way it looks to me broadly, which is why I can say it that way. Sagi, did you have a different or perhaps similar perspective?
All I can say is, look what happened to Target. They're going down the shitter and forcing people to smile. And so good luck, Jeff. Also, future class, absolutely, every time you said that, made me think of, like, we should make an X-Men, like, miniseries fan comic about, like, Days of Future Past and First Class, and make it Future Class. X-Men Future Class. Anyway, what else you got?
We also have a story here. This is running over on Kotaku, and of course, we will link you over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
The headline is, did Overwatch 2 just wrap up its canceled campaign in an audio drama? And the article is basically about how, you know, it's been 2 years since the Overwatch 2 missions initiative launched and then got canceled.
Topical.
Basically, there was a new, like, I guess, 6-minute audio drama. It's available on YouTube. It is official story content. But it basically, I guess, sort of wraps up multiple storylines from the supposedly currently ongoing story, and then sort of ends with a story continues in Overwatch 2. And the expectation is that they're adding a new, like, lore section, sort of Marvel Rivals style. Basically, right now, the Overwatch 2 fandom is sort of praying that Blizzard is clearing the deck so they can do more new story content, while on the face of it, it looks like they basically just released whatever they had in a direct-to-YouTube audio file. Not exactly the prestige that Overwatch 2 deserves, but at least it's not nothing. Do you have any thoughts on this one?
I mean, come on, audio dramas are what you save for when you want Tidus to be blown up when a bomb blitzball hits him. Not for the main story of your live service game.
Yeah, I no notes.
Well, I have some notes for Epic, because something that was exciting is not so exciting now.
Those
who are Fortnite players or follow the Fortnite news might have noticed that the long-rumored and leaked sidekicks, also we had referred to them as pets, you know, for a while, they're now in Fortnite. There's a really cute banana dog named Peels that you can get with the current Simpsons Battle Pass. However, the twist here is that you can only customize your sidekick once. And if you want to have a different appearance, you'll have to buy another copy of that sidekick. Data mining has suggested that this could be up to 2,800 V-Bucks for certain sidekicks, which is purchasable for $22.99 from the Fortnite shop. And, you know, there are lots of outfits. And, you know, again, we could have a huge discussion about microtransactions. I expect that we probably will at some point. But the fact that, like, the outfits you can get that have alternate appearances that you could swap at will, like, they don't work this way. So the fact that they're making you do this for the sidekicks is very predatory. And, like, something that I was excited for with the sidekicks, I am not going to participate unless they reverse this.
They have given out multiple freebies, including, you know, the cute banana dog Peels. I have actually not engaged my Peels, and you get 2 Peels. Like, there's another one in the battle pass. I guess they're, like, trying to normalize, like, having multiple of them and, like, customizing them differently, and I flat out refuse, so I haven't even set up my Peels and equipped him. I'm just never gonna touch it. I refuse to engage with this mechanic as it presently exists.
Same.
And I honestly, to a degree, I think there is a moral and ethical imperative. There's just no reason for this to work this way. It only exists to predatorily part people with their money, especially people who are whales and whale adjacent, like people who, like us, are willing to spend V-Bucks. They really want to take advantage of us. And it's just really gross, because there's literally no reason that this can't work the way every other cosmetic in the game already works. There is no reason for it other than to be a naked cash grab. So fuck that.
Yeah, it's too bad, because there's a little Doberman named Spike, and that would have been perfect for you.
Ah, right. Is it one of the Simpsons dogs?
No, it's a Doberman. But they also did have a dog named Bonesy, which is like Jonesy in a dog form. But yeah, a lot of these would have been really cute, and I would have probably bought them. And if they change their mind about how it works, then maybe I will, but not today, Satan. Not today.
Yeah. I mean, I'm seeing people out here talking about, if you want a complete set of like all of the alternate appearances, you can end up blowing hundreds of dollars on these things. That's just crazy.
Ridiculous.
So many of us are willing to like, oh yeah, for $5 or $10 a sidekick, sure, it's going to work just like every other customizable option, right? But no, they have to nickel and dime. They have to have every last cent. They have to be predatory. So fuck them.
Yeah. And just based on some other things that we aren't going to talk about on air today, that might be coming in the pipeline on Fortnite, I might be questioning how much longer I'll be spending playing Fortnite. But
yeah, I will say, I think the most major rumor happening is almost certainly fake, but if it did occur, I would also leave.
Yeah. So speaking of rumors, rumor has it. My name's Adele. Rumor has it.
Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it.
Well, Adele, I'm happy to tell you we have very exciting news potentially for fans of the Kingdom Hearts series.
Oh, really? Because my name is Adele, and I am a great fan of the Kingdom Hearts series.
This is word, although we don't know what for, that Haley Joel Osment is in the recording studio. Obviously, we don't know what Haley Joel Osment is voice acting at this moment, but the fact that he is posting back to work with images of a recording studio on his socials certainly does lead the fans to a certain leaf. I have my fingers crossed. I have been theorizing since earlier this year when we got that new set of 7 or 13 or whatever images of Kingdom Hearts 4 at the time of cancellation of Missing Link. I had theorized that a new trailer would be coming featuring those images. Fingers crossed that that's what this relates to, if not maybe even something bigger and better. Fingers crossed.
I'm so bloody excited, and you know, Utada should give me a call and I could do a duet with her for the new Kingdom Hearts 4 theme song.
Wow, Adele, I didn't know you and Utada Hikaru were on a first name basis.
Oh, with things are simple and clean between us, and I have some exciting news for anyone who is looking forward to playing the Silent Hill 2 remake on Xbox, because the release date was leaked freely on the Microsoft Store on November 21st. Which strongly, I can't keep doing this. this is strongly suggesting that the Xbox version is coming soon. So, I'll say that again in my normal voice in case you just were tuning that out because you were very offended. I'm sorry. I meant that with much love to Adele and any of our British fans. Fan. Listener. That Silent Hill 2, Silent Hill 2 remake's release date of November 21st was leaked briefly on the Microsoft Store, so that seems like it might be soon.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's exciting stuff. I've noted. I am a fan, and I think this is, a good thing. Gaming more widely available is never bad.
Indeed. Can you imagine if I just did the Adele voice, every rumor has it, from now on?
I can imagine that, but I would probably prefer you not do that.
I'll save it for Adelcast.
All right. Well, our last rumor here is a pretty funny one. Basically, it was put on my radar yesterday that within the Half-Life fandom, they've sort of worked themselves up into a tizzy again that Valve is theoretically going to announce a new Half-Life project.
Really?
And now I know what you're thinking, but there actually is some somewhat interesting evidence, circumstantial though it may be, to suggest that if nothing else, Valve does likely have something to announce later this month. I guess they've actually had a bunch of smaller, like, reasons to believe that a Half-Life 3 update is coming, just in terms of, like, there was some rumors last summer about data mined assets. There have been voice actor leaks where they've said like, oh yeah, I think I recorded something for a new Half-Life game, maybe. Supposedly there were rumors that they had like a full game that was playable beginning to end that was, you know, in the stages of finalization. Basically, a bunch of Redditors have come out and have put together a theory based on one particular piece of data. Basically, the theory goes that Valve doesn't make game announcements while major Steam events are happening. When you look at a list of Steam events scheduled for the year, there is a huge gap between the 18th of November and the 8th of December. This is even more notable because this is not normally a gap period for Valve/Steam. That's actually right where the autumn sale usually happens. But this year, Valve actually ran it 2 months ahead of schedule. And when they were asked about it on social media, the only thing they said was that it's intentional, that they intentionally ran the party early, or the party intentionally ran the sale early, which leads many of us. And now this is where I actually do become very interested. Maybe it isn't Half-Life 3, but it seems clear that Valve uses the top banner on their front page of Steam for all of their like major promotional pushes. That is typically where they advertise all of the Steam events, all of their sales and what have you. For what purpose did you intentionally reschedule your autumn sale so that you would have a free 2-week period on your banners before we go into the holiday season? And for me, the most likely answer to that is a new product of some kind. And given Valve, we all know what product people want to see out of
it. Another Steam Deck.
Right. I was going to say, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, we'll see. They certainly know that people are going to be teased by this. So we'll see in another month.
Right. This is, for me, is very much like there are two wolves inside of me. Like, one wolf, clearly there's not going to be a fucking Half-Life announcement next. Come on, be so for real. But the other wolf, well, okay, something is likely coming during the usual autumn sale window. Maybe it's Half-Life related, maybe it's not. But if nothing else, why did Valve reschedule this autumn sale? I am so, so curious, and I cannot wait until we have some answers.
Yeah.
All right. All of that having been done, all of that having been said, we transition from talking about one game that everybody wants into our discussion, I want the one I can't have.
We're still making Morrissey references in 2025.
And so this week we are following up on a previous episode. The discussion or the description for that episode was, this week, Captain Spike and First Mate Slagkick discuss the Never Played Symphonies, games that were in development and shown to the public, but eventually cancel. From would-be classics like StarCraft Ghost to sillier titles like Tattoo Assassins, the podcast pirates look at what was known about each game and why it got the axe. Also, the pirates go over games that were radically retooled or saved from cancellation. They also briefly discuss some games that were due to be localized or ported that never made it through. We are not going to belabor the point of summarizing our entire previous conversations. A big part of that is because those episodes still exist and can be listened to. A lot of the stuff we said back then is still true today. To that end, I would, I guess, like to add a couple of small addendum. Using retrospective perspective, one of the games that was a focus topic last time was Star Fox 2. We had a lot to say about the 95% final version that had leaked back in the day. We had discussed a lot of the opinions and perspectives of those who had played it via various piratey means, noting that it was sort of a proto Star Fox 64. It was interesting to hear us talk about this game to such length and detail when since then it actually has gotten a Nintendo officially sanctioned release via the SNES Classic. We now have, you know, the full version of the game. It is largely the game that, you know, we had played via various leaks and what have you. But listening to our conversation from back then before the official release was still fascinating all the same. And I also wanted to note, we ended up spending a great deal of time also discussing the canceled Capcom Fighting All-Stars. That is a game that I recently reflected on around the release of the Capcom fighting game collection getting its update to add the character Ingrid to it. Ingrid being the character who was going to be the original creation for Capcom Fighting All-Stars and whom has now been backported into a handful of games. I guess about the conversation overall, I would also like to note, in some contexts, this is a little bit of a conversation, a continuation of multiple conversations that we've had, both historically and since we began the Game Boy Remake project. When we get there, I'll let Slaggy do the heavy lifting of really contextualizing what I mean by that. But given that there's kind of a whole class of games now that sort of routinely become lost slash cut, it's kind of never been more important from our perspectives to really be thinking about games preservation, including but really not limited to initiatives like the Stop Killing Games initiative. And so to that end, we will predominantly be approaching this discussion in three pieces. I will let Slaggy take the first talking point, but I would like to set it up. We're going to start here by talking about cut content. Cut content or deleted scenes typically are footage that have been removed from the final version of a film or TV show. Broadly speaking, there are generally various reasons why scenes are deleted. This can obviously include time constraints, relevance, quality, or a dropped story thread. And it can also be due to budgetary concerns. A similar occurrence is off-screen, in which these events are unseen. The related term obviously would be extended scene. That is the longer version of a scene that has been shortened for the final version of a film or TV show. Often extended scenes are included in collections of deleted scenes or are referred to as deleted scenes themselves. This is a description that I've taken from Wikipedia, which generally speaking I view as suboptimal, but it is accurate as of, you know, November 8th, 2025, but for, you know, anyways, I may have gone a little off script in reading it. I did check the Merriam-Webster dictionary, but I did not find any entries for cut content, deleted scenes, any of those types of items. And I really felt like having a description there would lead into a more natural conversation. Within the game space, I also want to note, oftentimes cut content that we're talking about is referring to whole ass canceled games. But as we're going to discuss in the modern era, it is often not quite so clean cut and dry as all that. And with that having been said, Slaggy, I think that you had actually wanted to start us off by talking about specific content that was cut from a series of games that are well liked.
Yeah, one of my favorite things is whenever we get little glimpses of cut content from Pokemon. You know, we've had, at this point, had a Mega Leak, a Terra Leak, a Giga Leak. There's been so many leaks at this point, but some of the fun ones have been, you know, when we've been able to see, like, early designs or, like, just straight-up evolution lines and, you know, various Pokemon that aren't in the game, that, like, just don't exist. Like, that's always really fascinating to me. One of the things that was exciting is that there was apparently going to be a flying evolution in X and Y. Not in X and Y, Sun and Moon, another great game, obviously.
Yes.
And apparently the reason why they ditched it was because they felt like the concept art that they had for it was too similar to some of the fan art that was out there for flying evolutions. Because, you know, evolutions for the other types are a very popular focus of Pokemon fan art. So maybe one day we will see a evolution of a flying type, but we could have had it in Sun and Moon. There was also going to apparently be a Mega Jinx. So that would have been interesting. I mean, maybe her boobs would have been bigger. I don't know. So that, you know, now we're seeing just all these Megas in ZA and in the Mega Dimension. So, you know, maybe she will see her day. There was also some different types of, like, starters for various generations. I know a lot of times there had been a lot of focus initially in the fandom about those, like, original Gen 1 starters that, you know, are evolution lines that had been scrapped. But there was a little water bunny that was going to be in Ruby and Sapphire. It was really cute. And then I think my favorite one is that I'm sure that anyone who is a fan of Gold and Silver, like I am, are familiar with Remoraid and Octillery. It's the little fish and the octopus, and, you know, not really sure how a fish becomes an octopus, right? But whatever. So, you know, the fact that Octillery sounds like artillery, originally Octillery was going to be almost like a little tank, and Remoraid was a gun because based on a triggerfish. Honestly, I can see why they got rid of Remoraid being a gun, but I kind of live for the original concepts of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I likewise really get a kick out of seeing these Pokemon designs in various stages of development.
Right. And so, you know, I think one of the fun things is that even though some of these games, you know, are way, 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 way older and that we were already, you know, talking about this, that had been around even for quite a while when we did our original episode, like with these Mega Leaks and Giga Leaks and Terra Leaks and whatever you want to call them, leaks, you know, like we now in the modern day are getting like glimpses of cut content for these games. And I think that's really just fun to get a little insight to what could have been.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. So, presuming you are finished talking about Pocket Monsters.
Am I ever really finished talking about Pocket Monsters?
Well, all the same, I'd like to talk about a game that would have been a follow-up to a game that had been a monster in my pocket to go. This is, of course, Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep Volume 2. I view Birth by Sleep Volume 2 as cut content because it's a game that Tetsuya Nomura repeatedly referred to wanting to make. We got a trailer teasing the game as a concept at the end of Birth by Sleep Final Mix, which showed like new camera angle shots of events that had already occurred in the game and were like, the new camera angles sort of imply new information, very similar to what Nomura and company did in the Kingdom Hearts 3 Rebirth or Remind DLC, where they take the ending of Kingdom Hearts 3 and like pan the camera over to show Sora and Kyrie in the background, like setting things right. So using that sort of technique, he implied in the Birth by Sleep Volume 2 trailer at the end of Final Mix that there were still multiple stories to be told within the framework of Birth by Sleep. And then in interviews, repeatedly, Nomura indicated that he did have a new project that he had been working on in between Birth by Sleep and Kingdom Hearts 3. He specifically identified four sub-stories that he was attempting to wrap up with this game. And so broadly, many of us presume that this game, which did not come to pass, was Birth by Sleep Volume 2. This becomes a little bit more interesting because to a certain degree, some of this content, at least one of those storylines of the four mentioned, does get followed up on a bit in the 0.2 Birth by Sleep Fragmentary Passage chapter that was contained in Kingdom Hearts 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue. I just did that from memory. I'm feeling pretty good, okay?
I was just thinking about how that's basically how we title our episodes and stuff.
Right, the icon. The thing is, Nomura has mentioned since the release of Final Chapter Prologue that, you know, that is a part of the story that Birth by Sleep Volume 2 would have been, but it is a part of the story. It is not the full story. To this day, we have not been served with all of the story details that Nomura came up with for the Birth by Sleep Volume 2 period. I became became really passionate about this. I've been really passionate about this for years, but I really had a fire lit under me. There's been kind of a resurgence of people looking back to that era as we sort of mine the earlier days for content while we wait for Kingdom Hearts 4 or Missing Link's replacement or any damn thing. And people have really gone back to that Birth by Sleep Volume 2 trailer, have really been going back to a lot of the Nomura Famitsu reviews. Cynical over at the Gamers Joint, and we will link you to the video over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Had posted a video specifically about his theories on the production cycle of Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep Volume 2 that I found to be really additive to really my own perspective on just how much we're still missing from this period. There are a lot of like smaller side stories that are kind of suggested in the various hidden reports and Xehanort reports and what have you, and some reports in one of the games. Some of these side ideas still haven't been fully fleshed out, and it's kind of implied that some of them would have been in this side story. So definitely very interesting stuff that, per the metric of the episode, it captures my imagination today and probably into the future beyond.
That, yeah. Birth by Sleep has one of my favorite combat systems of any game ever. That and Dream Drop Distance, of course. The fact that we could have, should have, would have had more. I can only hope that we have an opportunity to see this content again, maybe with some of the stuff we'll be talking about later.
Indeed.
Please, please, please let me get what I want. Speaking of things that I would have wanted, is, you know, there were a lot of things with Rock Band that, you know, were straight up songs and straight up full band games and spinoffs that never came to pass. You know, the trailer of Rock Band 1 had Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses. That never actually appeared in the game. There was going to be a cover of Come As You Are by Nirvana, among some other songs. You know, there's Brown Sugar by the Rolling Stones was...
Yeah, and that would have been a big one, found. I think.
Yeah, yeah. But then there was also going to be Rock Band Japan, which I totally forgot about. I remember that announcement. I half expect we talked about it on the show.
Yeah, way back in the day, we were so excited for it. Like, just the idea of the announcement of a Rock Band Japan title was something that you and I were, like, theorizing and coming up with, like, you know, our ideal set lists for
which Asian
months.
Which Asian Kung Fu Generation songs are they going to put in?
All right.
Yeah. And so, you know, there was going to be a Pearl Jam one, apparently, and Pearl Jam was, like, talking about it. They also mentioned that they had been hoping to reach out to Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin, which would have been, like, wild because, you know, controversies with those bands, notwithstanding, you know, pretty iconic bands with pretty iconic songs. So
yeah, well, and something that was really interesting was that there was a panel that they had had at a PAX back in like 2013, and they actually acknowledged that they did make pitches and had mock-ups, you know, not real games, but mock-ups of like what as example Pink Floyd Rock Band or Zeppelin Rock Band would look like, mocked up in the style of what we got as a Rock Band Beatles, you know, so that type of treatment for some of these other bands, mega bands, right, is something that probably exists out there as a slide deck, you know, not a real game, but media imagining what it would have looked like. And I actually think that that would be some pretty interesting lost media if we could find anything about these supposed pitches at all beyond the fact that they happen.
Absolutely.
I also thought that at that same panel, and we'll include impressions from that panel. They were written up via Polygon. We'll link you over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
I was really surprised. It really seems like Nirvana and The Who were both really meant to be big gets, that they really were going to support having whole albums like Nevermind and The Who's Next.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's really fascinating. They had talked at that very same panel, and I think that this is worth noting, but they had talked back in the day about how a lot of the most wanted songs, it's not that they didn't chase them, it's that they were not accessible at the budget the game was working within. And to that end, it's my broad understanding that even some of the bands that we all used to theorize were in exclusive to Guitar Hero or what have you, there were not even really exclusivity deals in place. It's just that Activision had Activision money and Harmonix didn't. So Activision could get some of these licenses that Harmonix just couldn't afford. It's very interesting now that Rock Band is sort of a past tense thing to sort of look back on these sort of various eras and what deals did come through and which deals didn't come through, and how that related to the specific song content we did or did not receive.
Yeah.
That's just very interesting thinking point, I think.
Indeed.
Talking about an interesting thinking point, here is a show we have talked about so many times over the years. I want to bring up Final Fantasy Versus 13, and I'm cheating a little because Versus 13 and its recontextualization into Final Fantasy 15 is something we sort of gestured our arms toward when we previously recorded. But when we previously recorded, this situation was already strange and just got stranger, because the game hadn't actually released yet when we recorded our previous episode about canceled games and recontextualized releases. But
but
the Versus 13 version had been re-announced as 15 already, and so we did talk about that a little.
And then we even did a 15 Final Fantasy 15 episode, but even since then there's been interesting developments, and I will let you get to that.
Well, so within the specific context of what we're talking about here, we didn't really know, but when Final Fantasy Versus 13 was announced to become Final Fantasy 15, since the 15 version wasn't actually out yet, we actually had no idea how different the released game would be in direct comparison to that multitude of trailers that we had seen. Then I say multitude, I guess I really mean five or six, but we actually had seen a fair lot of Versus 13 by the time it got changed into 15. And we now know, you know, entire regions, characters, plot lines, settings within the setting were removed entirely. This is, of course, interesting just on itself, right? But then, as Slaggy says, this gets more interesting because since we talked about even those facets and we've dug in here and talked a little bit about how, you know, it was even more complex or whatever, Final Fantasy Versus 13 is directly homaged in Kingdom Hearts 3. There is music used in Kingdom Hearts 3 that is specifically taken from one of the Versus 13 trailers. There is a setting slash area that appears to directly refer to, I think it's Insomnia, one of the cities that was going to be in Versus 13. And then taking it even further, when the DLC for Kingdom Hearts 3 Remind finally released, the actual secret ending contains within it an entire Versus 13 ad scene that is now recontextualized with characters from the Kingdom Hearts setting. So Final Fantasy Versus 13 has become a really fascinating discussion because there's so many different facets here. There's the facet where, like, all of this content was created, hasn't been used. Nomura does seem still upset about it, but it's in a fucking chest locked up somewhere. There's the thread where, like, they put out this whole new version. It was reasonably popular, did reasonably good. Then there's now this new version where, like, Kingdom Hearts 3 is now playing in that old canceled space and doing new canon weird, like, recontextualizing meta content. I actually can't think of anything in games quite like this Versus 13 situation. But every time we get more from any of these weird projects referencing it, I become more and more curious and more infatuated with the concept of that original design of Versus 13. What do you think?
Oh, I could go on and on about that Remind ending, but we have other games to talk about.
Yeah, right?
Ooh, when we eventually do a proper Kingdom Hearts episode, it's going to be a doozy. Might have to be 358 over 2 minutes over two episodes.
I was going to make that exact joke.
So one that was very notable for cut content is Metal Gear Solid 5. You know, we famously know that, unfortunately, how that played out for Kojima-san. But, you know, the big thing is that, like, that game came out and, like, there is a lot of content that's missing. Specifically, the episode 51, which was going to be the last mission, that had, like, 30% of its cutscenes were already completed. It basically would have been, like, the conclusion that Kojima intended. But even with that, like, despite the fact that we've seen footage of it, that there's, like, wiki information, concept art out there, like,
It's been largely data mined. Like, the data does exist in the game file.
Back in the day, Konami was saying that there's no missing ending.
Yeah, and I still remember this. Like, it's so wild to me because Konami's literally like, oh, yeah, ultimately it was decided that 51 wasn't a part of the final game. It's like, girl, come on. We've literally watched video from the making of Kojima working on this material. The material's in the game. We know it, what happens, and that it's big and important. What are you talking about, girl?
Yeah, and then they kind of backtracked and said, oh, well, you know, it was in development, but then this was canceled. But, you know.
Yeah, and that's what I mean, right? Like, they said all that, but, like, we have eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one is really crazy stuff. The thing is, Metal Gear Solid 5, the Phantom, is a great game. I'm a big fan of the series already, right? And then you take, like, the Metal Gear Solid framework and put it in like sort of an open world. It's Metal Gear Solid 5 is almost like Metal Gear of the Wild, if you know, in the terms of the way we talk about games now, where we're like, oh, they're doing the Breath of the Wild thing. But Metal Gear Solid was doing it when that was still a very novel approach. It remains a major bummer to me that the story at the end just kind of fizzles out and just kind of stops. So this is definitely one that definitely catches in my maw as well, for sure. I think the last game I wanted to talk about here, and this will sort of serve as our transition into our second segment while also setting up the third, this is Unreal Tournament 2014, or rather Unreal Tournament, which was released in beta and alpha and, you know, early access for crowdsourced development in 2014, but it wasn't explicitly dated 2014. It was just referred to as Unreal Tournament. Initially, this was canceled in 2017 because Epic was sort of moving all hands on duty to Fortnite development. But because it was in alpha/beta/early access and they were crowdsourcing the development, it still had a very vocal following who also felt that the game was really shaping up into being something worth playing. When they announced the ending of development, they had said, you know, for the foreseeable future, it will remain playable, servers stay up, da 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 da. Unfortunately, that only lasted until 2023. So it has now effectively been removed from existence. There are private servers going. This has actually moved into an adjacent space to Lost Media, which is why it is our segue story or our segue topic into Lost Media, and we'll define what that is and then talk about it. But it's also the basis for our sidebar. So when we get to the sidebar, think about that this was put on our radar by really thinking about experiences we've had and enjoyed that have been taken away from us. With that having been said, the next part of the discussion is Lost Media. Lost Media is, in general, a piece of media thought to no longer exist in any format or for which no copies can be located, partial or otherwise. The term primarily encompasses visual, audio, or audiovisual media, such as films, television, radio, music, and video games. As with the other definition, this is pulled from Wikipedia, which I find to be suboptimal. But again, I also checked Merriam-Webster and did not find an entry that would suffice for our needs. I also want to note here, because it can be a little confusing whether a game is like a canceled game or lost media, from our perspective, and it's really not that important, but many canceled games are also lost media, but not all. And I think the easiest way to illustrate this would be a game we discussed in our original episode as a focus title, something like Thrill Kill on the PS1, right? Where it was never properly released, so it was a canceled game, but it's still widely available online, and the platform is easily emulatable. So despite being never officially released, it is still available in wide circulation. So it does meet the criteria for canceled, but not for lost. And that's a good exemplar for what the type of thing we're talking about here. Slaggy, I think you had had a note you would want to make here, and I would really like to give you the floor before I talk about my first lost.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I had thought in our recent recording that we would have touched on this more on our digital distribution episode, but actually we ended up talking about this sort of thing and kind of setting up this episode back in 179, which was Underappreciated Gems again. You know, we talked about things like Fuser, which at this point isn't officially lost media, so, you know, kind of exists in that gray area, but for all intents and purposes, like, it's kind of almost a new lost media, if you want to think of it that way. You know,
Yeah, I mean, you could make a real strong argument for that in lost media or as a canceled live service game, which we're taking the stance that are effectively post-release becoming lost, right?
Yeah.
So I completely agree with you. I think Fuser is a really incredible inclusion here because it does hit under lost media and under live service games.
Right, right.
God, should we be calling that segment Dead Service Games?
Dead Sega?
Service Games. All right. Well, so the first game I would like to talk about here for Lost Media. This is probably the title most people in the modern era think about as Lost Media. This is PT. And of course, when we talk about PT, there's two components here, right? Because there's the cut content angle of Silent Hills as a full game that got canceled. But in this specific context, I really want to focus on having us all having lost access to PT, the playable teaser. For those of you, of course, playing the home game, you may recall, even here during the Game Boy era, Slaggy and I, one Halloween, we did a Twitch stream of Slaggy playing through this short playable teaser masterpiece. Yes. We had no idea how lucky we were. You were saying?
I was saying, yes. I was remembering the baby.
Ah, yes.
The baby.
Right? And so the thing is, this game, and it's been discussed so much, but basically it was quite famously pulled from PSN, even for re-downloads in May of 2015. And that was after Konami had sort of initially implied that it would stay available for purchase for people who had initially accessed it, like basically that we would retain access. But obviously that turned out not to be true. The reason why we discuss it here, though, is that I understand that it has been technically preserved. There are, you know, PS4 ISOs of it or whatever floating around out there. But unlike a game like Thrill Kill, which is still very accessible because its platform is still easily emulatable, we're not really at that point yet with the PlayStation 4 era of software emulation. I'm sure it will happen someday. I do believe someday PT will be widely available, playable, and easily emulatable. We're just not there presently. And that's why for me, where we are right this moment is that PT is, like, we have media of PT, but PT itself is kind of lost media. And I think it really needs to be noted, you know, even the degrees to which it has been preserved are not really effective or practical for most people. I also want to note that because of that, one other method of preservation we have seen happen is that a lot of people have straight up recreated the game in various engines within other games. I think it's worth noting. I think it's a good thing. But I think what would be best is for actual PT to just not be lost media anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and then you think about like people who have it installed, you know, eventually if their PS4 hard drives give out, then it really, really, really will be lost media.
I still have a PS4 with PT installed. I haven't run it in probably 2 or 3 years now. And I do, I worry, like, someday I'm going to turn it on and it's not going to work. That's just how entropy works, right? Everything that has been, everything's going to break at some point. So, it's not great. I really would like to see this one restored. It's, I think, an important piece of gaming history at this point.
Indeed.
How about you?
So something that came to my mind when we were getting ready for this episode is, and this is kind of leaning more into the game cancellation aspect of, you know, kind of being lost media. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, blurring the lines maybe a little bit there, but,
scale for me counts in the sense that this is a game that was viewed at many trade shows. A lot of people played it. We do have impressions about this game. So again, it is a thing where it did exist and then has been removed.
Right, right. Because when we think of Microsoft canceling games, and it's funny, if you do a web search for canceled games, you'll get a lot of results for canceled Xbox games, because, you know, that's...
Well, a lot of the ones that I personally have thought about for inclusion in this episode is stuff like the Phantom Dust Remaster, which we have talked about in previous discussions, is why I didn't. It absolutely fits under that exact metric you're describing.
Right, but yeah, Scalebound, as you said, that was the big one for me. Like, you know, the for the modern ones, like Everwild from Rare looked cool. And, you know, Project Blackbird, the ZeniMax MMO seemed like it would be cool. Perfect Dark, obviously. But for me, like, not even anything modern, like Scalebound, like, I was really hyped for that. Like, Platinum Games doing stuff with dragons, like, hello. It looked really cool. So I just think the fact that, like, you know, we do not have a way to access, like, any of those playable builds or, like, anything like that, that's just, it's a shame because we love Platinum Games.
Yeah, we are big Platinum Games fans, so this is obviously a sore spot for us.
Indeed.
All right. Well, then I would like to, at this point, bring back up Legacy of Kain. I had talked a little bit earlier about Amy Hennig's involvement with this much storied franchise. I would like
damn.
To talk about what?
I was just like, damn, this really does happen to Amy a lot. Although right? she might have not been involved at this point, but still.
Yeah. So,
Sir Baby.
We will be linking to you over on GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
A handful of threads on NeoGAF.
NeoGAF,
really? Yeah, GAF is not a website that I use to talk about games anymore. Obviously, years ago I did, but various things happened there where it no longer was an area or space that I really felt was appropriate to be in. That having been said, that was the original source for what I'm going to talk about now. This is primarily, I'm going to say, about Legacy of Kain Dead Son, but honestly, you could consider this a talking point for all of the rumored 10 plus iterations of this series that have supposedly been attempted and canceled. So basically, there was a user on NeoGAF. They still post over on Reset Era, I believe. Their name is Mama Robotnik. And they posted what was at the time the biggest expose I had ever seen on the supposed cancel, any of the supposed canceled Legacy of Kain games. This was information regarding the existence and cancellation of Dead Son as a theoretical PlayStation 4 launch title. The thing that gets really interesting here is that Mama Robotnik ended up capturing a fair amount of art that was intended for the final version. They end up compiling huge chunks of what the storyline and plot would have been. They collected all of this information, and this is where things get kind of funny. They had collected all of this information and posted about it on GAF, and this was back in a time that I was posting on GAF. And basically, Mama Robotnik ended up getting outreached by a community manager at Square Enix who ended up actually giving them additional context, insight, and even art assets for this specific canceled game. So, you know, there have been all of these supposed canceled Legacy of Kain projects. I've been pretty open that in the past I dated someone who worked at Crystal. I have firsthand knowledge of some of these supposed revival efforts. So just seeing all of this information on Dead Son laid out bare for me was really interesting, both as a fan of the series and also as someone who had firsthand information that a lot of this does track to what had been my own understanding of the project. Which just sort of underlines how sad it is, right? That ultimately there were so many other Legacy of Kain sequels, spin-offs, related projects that did not get out the door, did not get announced, did not even reach any type of like market research phase, right? Basically, to date, the only project that has gotten that far and at least sort of reached the market was Nosgoth. That was a few years ago. It was a live service game that released into beta/early access, but ultimately never made it to final and, like most of the games we're discussing here, is now gone into the ether. And interestingly, there's actually some connective tissue between the revival process that they were trying to do here with Legacy of Kain and the failed revival that we talked about on our original episode of Chalkin' the Forever Man 2. So I thought that was really quite fascinating to be made aware of retrospectively this way.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the series. We just had the Legacy of Kain HD remasters come out earlier this year, and they sold above expectations. I have to assume there's a way to make a profitable Legacy of Kain project work. I hope someone figures this out soon.
Maybe it'll be Mama Robotnik.
Fingers crossed.
With help from Mama Luigi.
I was expecting you when I said Mama Robotnik to do Mama Robotnik.
Oh, Mama Luigi, classic.
Why don't you start carrying us homeward?
Yeah. So I think we would be remiss not to mention Kingdom Hearts Missing Link. In fact, Missing Link very much could have been a episode title here. You know, it is sort of adjacent to sidebar we'll be getting to in a minute, our Dead Service games. But just kind of with its circumstances, I feel it's important to mention it here. You know, this was announced in 2022 and went through some closed betas.
And there's why we get to discuss it here, right? Because as we've noted, when these games have the betas and they are released to the public, but then they're taken away, we're counting that. And that applies here.
Absolutely. So, you know, we had talked about how it was unfortunately, unceremoniously, I would say, too, canceled this year. I think the other piece here is just the fact that, you know, it gets meta because it was supposed to be a missing chapter of Kingdom Hearts lore. Cynical also did a video about this, that it was going to correct and protect the canon timeline. You know, so the fact that I kind of wonder, like, was this the plan all along? I would hope not, that they wouldn't be, you know, investing development time into a game that was going to be canceled. But it's just, it takes on an ironic sort of meta narrative now. And I feel like at this point, now that this is the case, similar to what we're seeing with Versus 13 kind of appearing in the Kingdom Hearts lore, like, I feel like this almost is, you know, ripe for the picking there.
Yeah, right. Well, and I'm of two wolves on that, in the sense that, like, surely if this is a prologue and, like, an important story to the basis of KH4, as has been implied, right, like, definitely they're going to revisit, recontextualize, reuse, or, like, release it as a game somehow, right? But the flip is, if they don't do that and they just work this stuff into the background as setting material, as information, as, you know, the context for your set scenes, they could they could probably do something wildly meta with this setup out. Especially the Cynical video had kind of implied that there was a threat to the canon Kingdom Hearts storyline or timeline. Maybe you lean into that and nobody protected the timeline and now history has been changed. Like, I'm really curious how this is going to play out and how the cancellation is going to impact the ongoing. I have a lot of questions about how they square this circle, no pun intended.
Indeed.
Then I would like to cheat a little bit here on my last pick for our lost media talking point here, right? And I want to talk a little bit about browser games, PSP minis, Ouya originals, and other, as I am calling them, defunct exclusives.
Ooh, does DSiWare count?
Yes, it would. Absolutely, right? This is a broad entry here, and that's intentional, right? I have a lot of concerns basically about a lot of these games that only get created and distributed via a single point of contact, when that single point of contact isn't Steam or Itch.io or Goodman Gaming or you know, and any of the specific trustworthy and historied outlets. When you tie yourself into a specific shop front, again, the PSP minis, the Ouya originals, those, the DSiWare slag you just mentioned, fundamentally, these programs are very ephemeral. If you have to get the money to make your game by making one of these exclusivity deals, then I think you absolutely must look at something like Towerfall on the Ouya, where they made their money, they got their game made, they published on Ouya, and then immediately started working on ports to other platforms for as soon as that exclusivity window ends. As a result, Towerfall is something we all still know and still talk about, despite starting as an Ouya original. A lot of the other games in that program were not so lucky, and I think that's pretty terrible. But using this sort of broad philosophical entry as my last talking point allows me to use it as a segue transition into our sidebar discussion. We just came up with the name for this. Y'all were here with us. This is Dead Service Games. or live service games post-release as lost media. I believe Slaggy, well, first off, I believe that more or less says exactly what we're doing here with this sidebar, third and final piece of our overall discussion. Slaggy, would you like to get us started here and talk about the first dead service game you'd like to highlight?
Yeah, so we have to start, speaking of browser games, with Kingdom Hearts Key, which was a browser game from 2013 to 2016. Of course, as we know, it became Unchained Key, which was a mobile app later renamed to Union Cross, later renamed to Union Cross Dark Road. That was around from 2015 to 2021, so a little bit of overlap there with the browser game. Taken offline in 2021, but fully delisted in 2024. I am kicking myself for never having downloaded it before then. You know, so if you still have it on your mobile device, then, you know, technically it's preserved. But I mean, at what point will it be, oh, this iOS version doesn't support it anymore? You know, so like, again, very real in becoming lost media. Now, because the way that it's preserved is that it's like videos, you can't play it. The actual gameplay of Union Cross, Unchained Key, Kingdom Hearts Key, Dark Road, like, that's all lost media at this point. Like, you cannot play that game as it was. Like, you can, you know, still find the information out there, but just between Missing Link being canceled and then how much that it seems like the Lost Master arc is going to be tying into this era of Kingdom Hearts lore. Like, Strelitzia literally was from this game, right? And, like, she appears in, I almost called it Foundation. That's Final Fantasy XIV. You know what I'm trying to say. Quadratum, thank you. You know, like,
well,
I feel
specifically
like...
specifically the space between worlds, she is our connective tissue to Quadratum, but she, quite importantly, is not in Quadratum herself.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I feel like they're going to have to do something between Missing Link and this, like, for a, you know, 3.9, maybe it could be a PS5 release or something, remaster, if we're still a few years off.
I truly believe that Square Enix could package a new version of Kingdom Hearts 3 that was like final mix, just giving like Kingdom Hearts 3 current gen support, so Switch 2, PS5, Xbox Series hardware specific calls support, and then package a movie version of Missing Link and of the Union Cross arc, so all three games or whatever. I actually think that that right there is a sellable package akin to 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue. I absolutely think it would be a 3.9 Final Chapter Prologue.
And then give us a 0.1 Fragmentary Passage.
Give me another Birth by Sleep Fragmentary Passage, right? But there instead we go. Instead of being like the Aqua story, instead this is like the Traverse Town Trio storyline that he had in mind for that. Like, there's so many things they could do. As you note, it is very interesting that, you know, even via like official Square Enix uploads, a lot of the lore is preserved on YouTube. It's interesting that the game version before the delisting had already deactivated the game content and had made it like video recordings only of the cutscenes in game. It's also super weird to me, like all of the Dark Road stuff, which gives us all of the Xehanort backstory, introduces a number of named characters, including the character that we believe to be the narrator for the Kingdom Hearts 4 trailer. It all just seems like such must-see content. I totally agree with you. It feels like it creates a major issue for this all to be out of circulation, more or less.
I think that our Kingdom Hearts coverage eventually, because we only did a mini on that, if you can believe that, and I had barely even touched the series. It's going to have to be 358 episodes over 2 years. So I think we should probably get going to another game we could talk about a lot, but... in this case, it's just a little footnote.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the ones I'd like to really note is the original version of Final Fantasy XIV. Obviously, Final Fantasy XIV still exists. Obviously, it is more popular now than it ever was in its original iteration. And yet, the fact remains that on a basic fundamental level, as someone who was there for the 1.0 version of Final Fantasy XIV, the version of Final Fantasy XIV we play now is just not the same version as what released all those years ago as 1.0. When they did the Realm Reborn refresh, it was, in my opinion, much closer to being a sequel game to being a new version of the same game. And I think it ends up having some knock-on effects of sort of like, also, like, at what point has a game changed enough that it deserves to be preserved on its own rather than as, you know, being one old update of Final Fantasy, for example? Because it's like 1.0 is different enough from the modern version that I consider them whole ass different games. But that's probably not true with every expansion, right? And so it just ends up being, I think, a really interesting question. And I think we've actually seen a form of this question play out a little bit in how Blizzard has handled WoW Classic and the ways that a lot of their pack expansion servers only, from my perspective, seem to focus on like the highlight patches. They don't seem like they're doing literally every patch, just like the big ones, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting kind of consideration, because you think about how Cataclysm changed Azeroth permanently. Like, thanks to WoW Classic, you can experience the original Azeroth as it was, but if they had not done that, then original Azeroth would have been lost media, really. And I think there's a whole other thing here, like, you know, the little side quests or limited time quests in MMOs, like, you know, we really had a good time this year with the pleasure cruise, or not a pleasure cruise, it was like, you know, the cruise ship that was docked in Costa del Sol for the summer event in Final Fantasy 14. Now, they could bring back that ship, but, like, you know, these seasonal quests, even though they're, like, you know, just cute little quests, you know, like, technically, and I'm not talking about things that are like recurring collaborations like Fall Guys, obviously, like the seasonal events, even if the items are sold in the cash shop, even if elements are available, like those specific quests are a one-time deal.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing, because, you know, a lot of us skip through cutscenes. A lot of us, you know, don't necessarily exactly care, but that's fundamentally irrelevant. This absolutely, I think, fits in this discussion, because it's absolutely content that is only available for a limited time. And if you miss it, you just straight up miss out. And even though I understand the idea of wanting to give your players things to celebrate for holidays or what have you, I don't actually think it's for the best of your entire player base to gate stuff off like this. I would much rather maybe, like, when it's Halloween, you could pick which Halloween quest you want to do, for example. I would much prefer that to there just being, oh, this year's Halloween quest. And I do think generally removing things like this is generally a bad feeling.
Because these holiday events build on like characters that you've seen before. So it would almost,
oh, yeah. So if you miss a year, actually, it can be a little bit like, what's going on exactly? But it underlines why you should be able to revisit the content to a degree. In fact, I'll note, I'm a fan of the band The 1975, although I certainly have some problems with them and their lead singer, so to say. But they recently had a kerfuffle where they removed one of the songs off of their album to like make the track list flow more to their modern tastes or whatever. And it's like, okay, so you're now telling me that even the people who bought your album on iTunes or whatever now can't listen to that song because you think the record flows better without it, even though we've had access to this song for like 3 years? No matter what, in terms of like whether you have the right to do that or not, to be on the other end of that transaction is going to feel bad. And it's like this, no matter what, if you're losing content you want to see, it's going to feel bad. Anyway, because I ended up ranting a little bit, I'm just going to move the ball forward. I would also like to point out Final Fantasy VII, The First Soldier. I'm submitting that to this conversation. This was the iOS Battle Royale game themed around Final Fantasy VII and specifically around Shinra's Soldier program. This was being used as a Sephiroth origin story. Unfortunately, the game itself only lasted about a year. It has now been lost to time. I guess the good side is that the storyline, as written, is now being presented in Final Fantasy VII Ever Crisis, the other mobile game that hopefully will stay up, because otherwise we're going to have the exact same problem in a few months.
Well, give it a few years. It'll get canceled.
Right? I will say, First Soldier, I didn't really like it that much as a game, but touchscreen controls for a battle royale are tough, and I wasn't able to get a controller working right, even though I was told that such a thing could be done. So I have revisited this storyline in Ever Crisis. It's fine. It's not being told as well as it was being told in the First Soldier, although I assume there's also a budgeting issue now that obviously Square Enix knows they don't have as much money in that segment, so to speak. It's not something I necessarily have a whole lot more to say, but I had wanted to bring it up the same. Did you have any thoughts on First Soldier / Ever Crisis?
No, just, they will find a way to tell their Final Fantasy compilation story one way or another.
Well, I hope. Then let me talk now about our last big talking. This is Marvel's Avengers, and we have talked about this multiple times on the original show. We've talked about this game on the revived show. We've talked about it in the previous episode that you've cited, but it gets a double duty entry here, right? Because this is a game that was canceled and is now entering that lost-ish media phase. If you don't already have access is becoming increasingly difficult to find. But in addition to that, because of the game's, how do we say, tenuous development cycle and the way that data miners work on live service games, we had pretty clear line of vision straight through to quite a few characters that were deep in development stages and other game content that ultimately never released. And one of the really interesting things about this is that before they terminated the game and eliminated it from the marketplace, they ended up rushing to like Echo Fighters to the game in the form of the Mighty Thor, as well as the Winter Soldier, who are both sort of patchworks of other characters' ability kits. Interestingly, some of the characters who were canceled, specifically She-Hulk comes to mind, were actually further along in development than some of these Echo characters were that ultimately got released. These Echo characters, for example, don't really have like voiced cutscenes or what have you, whereas She-Hulk, who by all accounts was a largely completed character, did have an entire little mini storyline of voiced cutscenes and everything that just straight never released to the final game. And it's widely believed, based on their completion of data in the files over the years, that they had Captain Marvel, Red Hulk, Scarlet Witch, Vision, and a fair number of others in various states of completion, ranging from more or less just started to supposedly fully playable. Additionally, there were a lot of indications that there was a great deal of content being prepared involving the Inhumans, likely even suggesting perhaps an Inhumans mini like storyline expansion, or even perhaps a full-fledged expansion. Obviously, this is hinted at a little bit in the game. Like, it's implied there's some stuff going on with the Inhumans during the Kamala Khan stuff, because obviously her origin. Just overall, it really reminds us again that when these games are killed, we lose the games and we lose so much potential. We've talked a lot about Marvel's Avengers. I really like it as a game, and I only think it would have grown bigger and better if they had any amount of faith, unfortunately.
Yeah.
From there, I think because we're getting so long in the tooth, I'd probably like to start wrapping it up. I would like to note there are so many other games we're prepared to talk about here. Per our notes, I mean, just like Anthem, Hyperscape, Destiny, although that one has a bullet because we're only talking about some worlds. Obviously, that Friday the 13th game that's weirdly still getting merch but has been off the market for more than a year and has been shut down for more than a year is a pretty interesting talking point, because they're clearly literally still trying to make money off it despite not having a game on the marketplace. Multiverses is a huge talking point that I think will become more interesting as we get further and further away from its services having been ended earlier this year. And then one that you brought to mind was actually Overwatch 1. And that And it really harkens to what we were talking about with previous versions of MMOs. But again, it's my understanding that even to this day, right, like if I wanted to go log into Overwatch 1, I could not do that. It's Overwatch 2 or nothing. I don't think that's a positive.
Yeah.
With all of that having been done and all of that having been said, I think you had wanted to mention a couple of places that you enjoyed collecting information for this episode. Otherwise, I guess I'd just like to ask you if, based on this discussion, you have any thoughts toward the future of games preservation, like that you would like to share.
Yeah. So just really quickly, I just want to call out the cutting room floor is always a really fun resource to find all sorts of things from games that was cut content. It could literally be like placeholder graphics, but I think that stuff's really fun. Another one, and not so much for this episode, but because it kind of focuses more on older consoles, is Unseen 64, which is basically looking at the canceled games, you know, or betas. So just always a lot of fun to explore and see that sort of documentation so that these don't come to be truly, truly lost media. And
great resources.
Yeah. Now, I think that we kind of touched on this a little earlier in the episode, you know, like just the fact that in the modern era, it's almost even, and we almost really didn't touch on this as much in our digital distribution episode as I thought we would have or possibly should have. But, you know, in this era, like things have much more of a potential to become lost media because especially if it's digital only, you know, so I think just now more than ever, stop killing games.
Absolutely. Stop killing games. All right. All of this having been done, all of this having been said, it's time to start winding down by talking about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
All right, so this week, the main game on my plate, so to speak, has been the post-game of Pokemon Legends Z to A. I have done Xerneas and Yveltal, which are the Pokemon gated after the first round of Infinite Royale, or Endless Royale, or whatever. I really enjoyed getting them. And then I actually realized I had previously understood that you had to do the next 15 infinite rounds in order to get Zygarde. So I did that, and then I got Zygarde. But then I came to understand and learn you can actually do Zygarde right after you've done Xerneas and Yveltal. So on one hand, oops me. On the other hand, that Zygarde fight's actually pretty challenging. So the fact that I held it off until after I had all level 100s ended up being really positive, and I wiped out Zygarde pretty quick once I was expecting the challenge. So the thing is, after you do your 15 rounds of the Infinite Royale, then you do get a Pokemon reward, but it is a Pokemon you probably already have. It's just you get the storyline Pokemon, which is cute. It then also gives you an epilogue story cinema. And this epilogue, in my opinion, actually should have been the main story conclusion. It kind of burns my britches that it's hidden and gated in such a way that a lot of people aren't going to see what I feel is the game's main story conclusion. I was kind of like, before I saw the epilogue, I was like, okay, well, the DLC is going to be fun, but that's cute. Now I'm like, oh, okay, actually, there's like one or two things I'm actually interested in seeing how this plays out. So I am more on board. So I definitely don't think this epilogue should be gate kept by 15 Infinite Royale battles. But having done it, I did have a great experience with it. I'm excited for more Legends Z to A. It was just, you know, a great experience overall that did happen to have some downside. I think you've also been playing Legends Z to A this week.
Yeah. I would say, honestly, that's probably what I've been playing the most as well. Since our last episode, I too finished the main story at this point. I know you had finished it at that point. There were some parts of the final mission that were a little frustrating mechanically, but I think the ideas that they were exploring were really cool. I enjoyed how the story wrapped up. My impressions overall of the game have pretty much remained the same. Like, there are areas of improvement, but it's more positive impressions that I have than not. I've tried to kind of give myself a little breathing room with the post-game stuff, just to not burn out on it, but I do keep coming back to it, whether it's just to catch alpha Pokemon or, you know, try to fill up my Pokedex and 100% the different wild areas. So I still really enjoy that, and, you know, I look forward to trying to continue to finish up the post-game content and get ready for the Mega Dimension DLC.
Yeah, excellent.
And then really quickly before we do our next one for Crosstalk.
Go for it.
Because I think you might have had a little bit to say about this one as well. I did in Final Fantasy XIV. I have not been playing as much as I usually do. Not out of... It's like I made a note that it's not you, it's me to the game. Like, I just, it's not out of lack of interest. I just have, I just haven't found my groove on the game again yet. But I did do the Guardian Arkveld trial, which is the new Monster Hunter crossover. It's kind of difficult compared to the Rathalos fight. I've only did it once, though, so, like, I literally was trying to learn mechanics and figure it out. But, you know, I got through it, got my quest rewards, you know, so... I thought it was really cute. Otherwise, just trying to get my PvP series leveled up before the patch next month. And, you know, do some crafting. You know, it's post-game or end-game level cap content. So, you know, there's not super FOMO there or anything.
Yeah, I have honestly not been playing much 14. I've just been logging in to do my dailies mostly. Like, I did also do, like, the Guardian Arkveld trial and whatever. But, like, it's mostly, like, just kind of on maintenance mode right now. Do my dailies, get out. And that's mostly just because I've been playing other games with my time. I've been putting in a fair amount of time into Fortnite.
Do it while you can.
They're doing the Simpsons month this month. So the whole... island is like simulacrum of Springfield, and it's really beautiful. It's really fun. The loot pool right now is a little boring for me. It's mostly basic guns, which I sort of derisively call Call of Duty mode. Like, if I wanted realistic gunplay, Fortnite's not the game I'm playing. But they did this weekend add some more high power weapons, so I've been playing main mode battle royale drops more frequently. My battle pass is leveled up into the 40s. I'm playing a lot more Blitz right now than Battle Royale, largely because Blitz has, like, some high-powered charge shotguns, and I'm more into the heavy weaponry. They also added a new mode per their Disney collaboration. This was the Disneyland Game Rush. I thought it was a really cute and fun minigame mode. I don't think it's necessarily a huge focus for anyone, but I think it's a perfectly fine little mode. It's a little too chaotic to take very seriously for me. Festival remains festival. I have a good time with it. I'm really excited about all of these rumors of vocal songs that have received Pro Vocal updates on the backend files, as well as
Revolution Revisited,
as well as Cracked having just announced a new drum kit for the game, indicates that we are going to have new modes and features probably being added into the next several months. So that's really exciting for me as a fan of Festival. What about you, Psyche?
Yeah, I wanted to, since you just talked about the Disneyland Game Rush, it's cute, but I hope that this is just a little taste of what they were talking about with their partnership, aside from some of those skins that have already showed up, like Maleficent.
Girl, that partnership was for billions of dollars. This isn't the whole thing.
Right, because if this is it, then it's kind of a big nothing burger, but, like, I think the ideas they're exploring it is really cute, but I was just a little disappointed because I thought when I saw it, I was like, oh my god, it's explorable Disneyland in-game. I'm going to be able to go and, you know, go into the different rides and, like, play mini-games based on them, but it kind of just puts you in a little, like, hub area and then thrusts you into the mini-games, and they're cute, but, like, you know, hopefully it's just kind of more of the proof of concept, something they kind of threw together for the Disneyland 70th anniversary. I'm not super into it, honestly. The Simpsons map, I think, was really well done. I've only done a couple drops, but what I really wanted to talk about quickly was I did dip into Fort Nightmares before it went away, and Demon Rush really, like, got my groove going. Like, I really liked it. I liked the way that I had not played the whatever they had called it before, in the previous years, but the way that the leveling system basically almost made it kind of like roguelike so that you could improve your Demon Rush runs. And I mean, they might have done that in the past, but I had not really engaged with that system. If so, like, I thought that was really cool. Like, I would legit play a full game. I know horde modes are literally a thing. We're going to talk about it in a bit briefly for another game. But, you know, I would play this as a standalone game, honestly. Like, I had a lot of fun. I did a drop with you in Sulker. It was great.
Excellent.
And then really quickly, before we talk about our next crosstalk, because we had a lot of crosstalk this time, was that I tried to start Brilliant Diamond, Pokemon Brilliant Diamond, per our autumnal episode. But honestly, like, I don't remember this when I first tried it in handheld, so maybe it wouldn't impact as much as handheld. But when I was playing it on my TV, like, the frame pacing, honestly, was, like, messing with my eyes. So I kind of noped out of it. Also, like, it wasn't really engaging me. I was just kind of, honestly, a little bored. So I feel like, to scratch that itch, I feel like I've got to, you know, get a dual screen handheld of some type to get that retro Pokemon itch, because this really wasn't doing it for me.
I'm sorry to hear that. Let's see. I have also been playing a lot of Marvel Rivals. Now that I've had proper time into the game, having returned to it, Marvel Zombies mode has its hooks in me. This is, of course, the horde mode that is present in this game. It was actually recently announced that NetEase is going to be extending it into an additional month, actually, and they added some new rewards and stuff. So it seems like the efforts that Marvel Rivals have been putting into Marvel Zombies to try and attract new crowds and re-attract old crowds might be working. Because we've put so much time into Marvel Zombies, I've also been doing some main game drops again. I'm having fun with it. The thing that I've really enjoyed has been the fact that all of the added characters, from my perspective, have been additive. I've taken them all out for quite a few spins now, and like, none of the new characters are like weak or jank or anything. Like, you can have a whole party of all new added characters or whatever and just be a perfectly competitive team, and I think that's really cool. But you can still likewise be a team of old favorites and still perform and compete and hold your own. I know the game gets a lot of hate for its perceived balance, but I actually think it's kind of better balanced than it looks on first blush. I'm also really excited, looking forward to the highly teased Gambit and Rogue reveal that's going to be happening next week. And of course, because of how the nature of time works, if you're listening to this, you've probably already seen it, lucky listener. What about you, Slaggy? I did see you logged into Rivals a couple times.
Yeah, I was logging out just as you were logging in, unfortunately, the other night, because I logged in to try zombie modes. I had not logged in months. Like, I probably have missed a couple of battle passes or whatever. I thought it was fun. I would say, for my taste, I thought Demon Rush kind of suited my taste for horde mode a little bit better. Like, the zombies mode, there were just so many zombies, which was kind of fun. It almost made it like more like horde mode Musou in a way. Like, and so that's fun, but I was expecting more of like a Demon Rush experience. But I will give it some more chances and hopefully play with you guys. I probably feel like I should dip back into the regular PvP, because I had enough fun playing the zombies mode that I was like, oh yeah, you know, I enjoyed this game. It's just, I kind of had to fell off it for a while. Really quickly, I had two others that I wanted to talk about. I finally decided to push forward in Donkey Kong Bonanza rather than trying to 100% every layer. Although now that I'm not trying to 100% every layer, I feel like I'm kind of going through it fast. And so like, I'm like, oh, is it kind of not as much content as I thought there would be, because, you know, the more content is, you know, the 100%ing it. So, you know, I'm still having a lot of fun. I love the mechanics and looking forward to playing more. And then just earlier today, before we recorded, I checked out the Kirby Air Riders Global Test Ride. The very first impression I got logging in was that, you know, Michiko Sakurai-san's venues are the best in the business. Still, forever and always. She is totally an underrated queen. You know, obviously Masahiro Sakurai-san is legendary status, but I also feel like his amazing and talented wife deserves a lot of credit for the visual flair. I did not spend a lot of time with it, obviously, owing to when I started playing it, but it's really cute. I like what's on offer. I have not mastered the controls yet, but it's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to spending more time with the game when it comes out later this month.
Excellent. All right. Well, that about wraps up what we've been playing. And with all of this having been done and said, I think it's time for the exit.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank Salker for reposting our previous episode. And I'd like to thank our responses to the Social Links question of the week, which was, hello, folks. This week we're talking about canceled slash cut games and content that have held on to our interest. Do you have any? And our responses are ones that we covered, so totally mind-meld here. Bathory Holmes said, the mascot for this lack of content, PT, a playable trailer? Teaser? Either way, super obtuse, but captured people's imaginations and dread in a downward spiral inside someone's home. Silent Hills, doubly painful as it came during the Renaissance, while Konami was busily with gambling machines. Oh, the patchy slots. You know, it's funny because I was reading recently about how some of the PT vibes, people feel that like Village and Biohazard 7 and 8
absolutely
kind of picked up where PT left off. So yeah. And then Salker said,
with Bathory Holmes, it's why I brought PT up. And I also agree with you when you say that there are certain degrees to which I do feel that Silent Hills and the cancellation thereof did end up flavoring the Renaissance era RE titles.
The Renaissance, Renaissance. And I just love that we're not the only ones complaining about patchy slot. And then Sulker, I wonder who that is, said, Final Fantasy Versus 13, a game which promised us the original version of Noctis and a fantasy based on reality. And I think it's neat that you can see its DNA in KH3 in Verum Rex, and then again in Remind as the clear path forward for what's coming. Indeed. And we'll be talking very shortly about what's coming in Game Buoy land, but I'd like to thank you all for your feedback. We love your feedback. We love your subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. Facebook. We post on Blue Sky at GameBuoy.org with an actual dot.
GameBuoy.org with an actual dot.
We're on Mastodon at GameBuoy at mstdn.games.
At GameBuoy at mstdn.games.
And if you want to listen to us on YouTube, you could go to GameBuoy.org, no dot.
GameBuoy.org, no dot.
You can email us at GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled D-O-T-O-R-G.
GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
Yeah. But if you use an actual dot, I should probably check that email and set up forwarding. Our home base is GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Captain Spike, shout us out.
If you're friends with Buoy, then you're friends with me. If you're down with Buoy, then you're down with me.
I'd like to point you in the direction of Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, our friends and inspirations from whom we take so many of our cues. Orange Lounge Radio is wrapping up their final season of content. They record live on Sunday nights. If you have a free Sunday night and they're still on, you should be there. I'd also like to point you in the direction of Aftermath. In their own words, Aftermath is an independent, worker-owned website about video games, other media, and internet culture. In my words, they're the audience-supported, hint hint, site that many of our faves have landed at. We cite them all the damn time, and we strongly encourage you to check them out, as well as to support them if you like what they do. I'd also like to point you in the direction of The Game Mechanics, where they kick the tires and run diagnostics on tabletop experiences. Hosts Logan Jenkins and friend of the show Greg Leatherman have been playing games for decades and have designed and released several games themselves. Please check them out. And last but absolutely not least is Walloping Web Snappers, a Spider-Man podcast, where Doug and Derek dive into every Spider-Man cartoon ever made, from the swingin' 60s through the rockin' 90s, to Spectacular, Ultimate, and beyond. Slaggy?
I'd like to point you in the direction of the Bobby Black Wolf Show, a weekly internet radio show and podcast discussing the latest news in gaming, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. The Video Game Realness podcast for a dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. The Nintendo Pal Block podcast, a dive into the week that was in the world of Nintendo. Standard Issue Computing on Blue Sky for retro and modern computer games, hardware, software, and history. Sasha's Retro Bytes on Blue Sky for bytes of vintage gaming, including magazine scans and photographs. Defunct Games, your daily source for modern game video game reviews, exciting trivia competitions, and old school magazine analysis. And Thomas Game Docs on YouTube, where each video covers a different aspect of video game history, such as game development and sound design for beloved Nintendo franchises. And I'd like to shout out to our wonderful theme music done by the late great Zelda Reorchestrated that lives on in the form of ZREO Second Quest. Check him out at ZREOSQ.com. And I'd like to shout out to my hot robot boyfriend, Craig, our robotic recording engineer. Without him, Game Buoy would not be possible in the modern era, so check out Craig if you have disco recording needs.
Disco recording needs.
God, I sound like I should be narrating a Micro Machines commercial here.
Ah, all right, folks. In the coming days, Pokemon. So please
catch them all.
Look forward to that. But until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
Stay safe.
Stay safe.
Stay strong.
Stay strong.
And I want the one I can't have. And drive mad. It's all over my face.
A double bed and a stalwart lover, sure. These are the riches of the poor.
Tough kid who sometimes swallows nails. Raised on prisoner's aid. He killed a policeman when he was 13, and somehow that really impressed.
Right.
You remember those Micro Machines commercials, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yar. Could I get another yar?
Yar.
Into our discussion, I want the one I can't have.
We're still making Morrissey references in 2025?
This is a Smiths reference. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's Morrissey Mar. I guess we can allow it.
Also, I'm being so for real, I did specifically look for the Smiths reference rather than a Morrissey reference.
I am back. You might not be back. You might be hearing you were edited, but you probably saw the waveform on your Audacity.
Their resources were too limited to be focusing on gold, to be focusing on Ghost.
I was like, did you just say focusing on goat?
Different one. Let's talk here about the strange case of Star Fox 2. That Capcom was trying to crack the 3D fighting nut, especially after the somewhat poor performance of Street Fighter EX. And then, you know, they went off and, you know, they did Star Gladiator and Technomancer, and even, you could probably say, like, the Power Stone games and stuff. Like, Capcom was really trying to figure out a way to make 3D fighting games happen for them. It was never released, but it did do a location test at the Sunnyvale Golfland.
Wow, that's local for us.
Well, you know, actually, all of the big fighting games used to location test at Sunnyvale Golfland. Capcom and Sega both, because they have Bay Area studios, or, you know, Bay Area headquarters, used to do all of their location tests for arcade games at those,
right.
That arcade, and, the Nickel City in San Jose was a big one for location tests.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually very fortunate to live in this area. In any event. There was also a tattoo button that every character could use to summon the powers of their tattoos!
Say what?
Very likely that we will someday do a Mother episode of Game Buoy.
Mother!
Man, I had made that joke in the show notes when we talk about Mother itself, and now it's not going to seem as original. I hate you. It's quite an accomplishment.
That it had Bill Trinan's personal touch.
I can't with how thirsty y'all bitches is. Slaggy McWaggy, why don't we talk a little bit about the in-development Final Fantasy VII?
Do we have to?
And, you know, that also goes for Half-Life 3. I'm sure that we're going to get some people asking why we haven't talked about Half-Life 3 yet. And that's because, as far as we're concerned here at Game Buoy, Half-Life 3 is going to happen. But Valve works on their own time. Like, Valve time is a thing. It's impossible to say Half-Life 3 is not coming, because it's going to. It's clear. It just might not be for another 10 years.
Yeah.
Would be the NES Mother game.
Mother!
Tell your children not to hold my hand! And, oh, mother!
Mother!
Anyway.
That